What's wrong with being an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times?
Do you want to be an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times?
Yeah, I think I'd like to be an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times. Then grab it! Grab it!
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool.
I never once said, na-da-da.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you.
Welcome back, folks. It's Reese on the radio right here on blogtalkradio.com/Reese on the radio. And we gypped, and the word gyp means joined in progress, the Obama speech yesterday. The number here is 347-308-8701. We are live, of course, just after 7 o'clock on the 25th of January, 2012. Plenty of stuff in store today. There wasn't any real reason to rehash everything that happened in the State of the Union address. I didn't think so we needed to. We don't have to go through the entire speech. We don't have to break down the entire speech. That
television is a goddamn amusement park. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We're in the boredom-killing business.
I apologize.
Well, if you want the truth, go to television.
My apologies, folks. Apparently, there's some sort of technical thing going on with Blog Talk Radio. How do I have any audio played, and that played on its own? Anyway, back to what I was saying. It wasn't important. It was not important to go into the entire speech. We don't have to rehash it. We don't have to play every bit of it. We don't have to do any of that. It's important that when we break down this speech, we break it down where it's important, where it's relevant. Because I want people to understand the most important thing. And to all of my new listeners who I know will be checking out the show tonight, there are a lot of people who haven't checked out the show and what it is that we do here, you know, is that we go after the truth. We don't combat it. We go after the truth. That's what it is that we look for. We find the truth in everything. And you may be a partisan person. You may believe what it is that you want to believe. But that's what we do here. We argue what is and what isn't. What might be, you know, a social norm. What might be common knowledge. What it is that we want to believe. What it is that we should believe. All those things are a part of what it is that we do right here on Reason Radio. And we discuss them. Might I say that I'm usually right? And usually it's not like most people think that they're always right. I think that I'm usually right. I will go out on a limb here and say that I'm probably 68% right. I'm probably 68% right. Now, that being said, going back to President Obama. Now, you heard the speech that President Obama gave last night. For most of you people, your regular programming was interrupted. If you had basic cable, you could watch something else. Maybe Everybody Loves Raymond, King of Queens. Maybe you watch, what is it, Dance Moms? Is that like the new trend? Everybody likes that show now? But I want to go into a couple of things that Obama said last night. And let's go to the fact check to find out whether or not he was telling the truth. That's what we're going to do today. But it was important for me that I play one simple thing about President Obama that no one is really talking about. And that is plagiarism. See, Obama yesterday plagiarized his entire State of the Union speech. Well, of course he did. And I have the proof. You know that I have the proof. You see, there are things that he said in the State of the Union that he should have never, ever said. Remember what we're talking about, the State of the Union. The State of the Union is where we are today. Most of his speech was about the future. It should never be about where we want to go. It's about the state of the union. What have we done so far? What did this administration accomplish? What did your government do for you? It's the state of the union. But President Obama cannot run on his record. That's the reason why he didn't address certain things that he passed, the legislation that he passed. He didn't address it. But plagiarism, as I said, let's go into that. Here's proof that President Obama is guilty of plagiarism. Now, I think I should set this up. Pay attention. What you are about to hear is President Obama repeating the same things that he said in 2011, and in some cases, 2010, 2011, and now 2012. Listen for yourself.
Whether the hard work and industry of our people is rewarded, or hard work pays off, and responsibility is rewarded. Let's fix what needs fixing, and let's move forward. Tonight, I want to speak about how we move forward. It's time for colleges and universities to get serious about cutting their own costs. Colleges and universities have to do their part by working to keep costs down. And we should continue the work of fixing our broken immigration system. Now, I strongly believe that we should take on, once and for all, the issue of illegal immigration. I believe as strongly as ever that we should take on illegal immigration. And let's stop expelling talented, responsible young people. Let's at least agree to stop expelling responsible young people who could be staffing our research labs or starting a new business, who want to staff our labs, start new businesses. We'll put more Americans to work repairing crumbling roads and bridges. So much of America needs to be rebuilt. We've got crumbling roads and bridges. We face a deficit of trust. I talked tonight about the deficit of trust. We can't wage a perpetual campaign. We need to end the notion that the two parties must be locked in a perpetual campaign. We should give them a government that's more competent and more efficient. We should all want a smarter, more effective government.
Need I say more, ladies and gentlemen? It's just a rehash of old ideas that never panned out. Now, to give credit where credit is due, that was a commercial released today by the Republican National Committee. He just repeated everything he said last time. State of the Union is he's done nothing. And when he does talk about doing something, he lies about it. Quote, we have subsidized oil companies for a century. That's long enough. It's time to end the taxpayer giveaways to an industry that's rarely been more profitable and double down on a clean energy industry that's never been more promising. Well, according to Fact Check, this is at least Obama's third run at stripping subsidies from the oil industry. Back when fellow Democrats formed the House and Senate majorities, he sought a $36.5 billion in tax increases on oil and gas companies over the next decade. But Congress largely ignored the request. He called again to end such tax breaks in last year's State of the Union speech. And he's now doing it again, despite facing a wall of opposition from Republicans who want to spur domestic oil and gas production and oppose tax increases generally. Obama says our health care law relies on a reformed private market, not a government program. Fact Check says that's only half true. About half of the more than 30 million uninsured Americans expected to gain coverage through the health care law will be enrolled in a government program. Medicaid, the federal state program for low-income people, will be expanded starting in 2014 to cover childless adults living near the poverty line. The other half will be enrolled in private health care plans through new state-based insurance, but many of them will be receiving federal subsidies to make their premiums more affordable. And that's a government program, too. Starting in 2014, most Americans will be required to carry health coverage, either through an employer or buying their own plan or through a government program. Obama says asking Congress to pay for construction projects. Take the money we're no longer spending at war. You know he made that comment. He said use half of it to pay down our debt and use the rest to do something, some nation building right here at home. Well, fact check says the idea of taking war savings to pay for other programs is a budgetary sleight of hand. For one thing, the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan have been largely financed through borrowing. So stopping the wars doesn't create a pool of ready cash. Just less debt. And the savings appear to be based on, at least in part, on inflated war spending estimate for future years. So in other words, he's talking about, oh, you know, we're not spending that money on war anymore. But the wars was on borrowed money. So there's no money to speak of. Obama says through the power of our diplomacy, a world that was once divided about how to deal with Iran's nuclear program now stands as one. The facts say the world is still divided over how to deal with Iran. And everybody knows that that's true. Obama said, tonight I want to speak about how we move forward and lay out a blueprint for an economy that's built to last, an economy built on American manufacturing, American energy, skills for American workers, and a renewal of American values. Facts say economists do see manufacturing growth as a necessary component of U.S. recovery. U.S. manufacturing output climbed 0.9%, not even one, in December, the biggest gain since December of 2010. This is my favorite one. This is the one that really, really got me, folks. Obama says the Taliban's momentum has been broken, and some troops in Afghanistan have begun to come home. The facts, Obama is a little Seguin about progress in Afghanistan than his own intelligence apparatus. The latest national intelligence estimate on Afghanistan warns that the Taliban will grow stronger using fledgling talks with the U.S. to gain credibility and stall until U.S. troops leave, while continuing to fight for more territory. The classified assessment described to the Associated Press by officials who have seen it says that the Afghan government hasn't been able to establish credibility with its people. Obama says, on the day that I took office, this one struck me. And you, if you listened to yesterday's show, even I screamed this. Obama says, on the day that I took office, our auto industry was on the verge of collapse. Some even said that we should let it die. With a million jobs at stake, I refuse to let that happen. In exchange to help, we demanded responsibility. We got workers and automakers to settle their differences. We got the industry to retool and restructure. Today, General Motors is back on top of the world's number one automaker. Chrysler has grown faster in the U.S. than any major car company. Ford is investing billions in U.S. plants and factories. Well, folks, here are the facts. He left out many key details. The bailout of General Motors and Chrysler began under the Republican president, George W. Bush. Obama just picked up the ball. He earmarked more money and finished the job. But he mentioned Ford. And Ford never asked for a federal bailout and never got one. So here he's taking credit for Ford, and everybody knows Ford never received a federal bailout. So he outright lied. And there are a host of others on this list that I can go through. And of course, liberals bought it. People on The View today talking about how his speech was Reagan-esque. That was Joy Behar. And that was Bull Yankins. This president has failed based on the standards he set for himself. The number's 347-308-8701. Let's listen to his own plagiarism. That's right, I said he plagiarized his own speeches.
Whether the hard work and industry of our people is rewarded, where hard work pays off, and responsibility is rewarded. Let's fix what needs fixing, and let's move forward. Tonight, I want to speak about how we move forward. It's time for colleges and universities to get serious about cutting their own costs. Colleges and universities have to do their part by working to keep costs down. And we should continue the work of fixing our broken immigration system. Now, I strongly believe that we should take on, once and for all, the issue of illegal immigration. I believe as strongly as ever that we should take on illegal immigration. And let's stop expelling talented, responsible young people. Let's at least agree to stop expelling responsible young people who could be staffing our research labs or starting a new business, who want to staff our labs, start new businesses. We'll put more Americans to work repairing crumbling roads and bridges. So much of America needs to be rebuilt. We've got crumbling roads and bridges. Face a deficit of trust. I talked tonight about the deficit of trust. We can't wage a perpetual campaign. We need to end the notion that the two parties must be locked in a perpetual campaign. We should give them a government that's more competent and more efficient. We should all want a smarter, more effective government.
And there you have it, folks. There you have it. And we bring in the intrepid crew, Mary Mary, why you buggin', and of course... Bernie.
Please tell me we have James, the Kool-Aid man, on the show tonight.
I wish that he was here. You know what?
Wednesday. Today is his day. What's going on?
I know. You know what? I'm going to make sure that I text him now, and I'm going to get him on here, find out why he's not here. He does need to be here, because I would love to know. But folks, let me ask, what do you think?
Your audio is breaking up, Reese.
What president plagiarizes his own speech? How many talking points did he completely repeat?
Well, this is the problem. You know what the problem is? Obviously, the problem is that people, our government, and it's not just Barack Obama, other representatives for our government have done the same thing. They repeat the same thing over and over again, attempting to maybe say it in a different way or in a different context. The problem is the people. We, the people. The people that just listen and, oh, it sounds great. It sounded wonderful. Well, it sounded wonderful all four or five times that he said the same thing over and over and over again, just like it sounds wonderful when everyone else says the same thing over and over and over again. But if you check the facts are that he's been saying all of this, and I voted for him in 2008. It's saying that, you know, they keep saying the same thing over and over again and not accomplishing anything. He did not lay out any facts of what he has accomplished thus far, because nothing has been accomplished.
You know, that, again, if for somebody who's voted for him, Mary, as you eloquently put it, you voted for him and you supported him. This is exactly what I'm talking about, is that I believe that there are a lot of people out there who have buyer's remorse. I don't think it's a matter of whether or not it's Newt Gingrich or Mitt Romney. I don't care about the division going on in a Republican Party in the primaries. I think that more Americans know we're not going to reelect this guy because his performance has been abysmal.
But you know what? As you say that, Reese, if I can interrupt you for a second, that, as sad as it is, he may get reelected because there are people that are pushing, that have, you know, that are on national radio, that are on national TV, and are pushing for him to be reelected for things that don't matter. They're not these intelligent people that are supposed to be well educated and that are making, you know, millions of dollars a year, that have, you know, that have the voices to get out there and reach all of the people that some other people don't have that avenue, are pushing to, I listened to, I think I was telling you this earlier, I listened to what's his name on the radio this morning? What is his
Steve,
name?
Steve Harvey.
I was listening to, thank you, to Steve Harvey this morning, and, you know, they just kept saying over and over and over again, oh, we can't let this be a one-term presidency. We have to get out there and vote. For, you know, for those people, they're putting stricter laws on voting. If you don't get out there and register on time, you won't be able to vote. So please go to BarackObama.com to register to vote. You know, they're the same radio station that Steve Harvey does his show on in the evening, I forget what the guy's name is that does another show, he was promoting it as well. So it's like, you know what, people, really, can we not research anything? Do we just vote purely on what we hear and what we see? And, of course, you don't remember or you don't think to put two and two together that he has continued to say the same thing over and over and over again, but we have no proof that anything has been done. You've already said you were going to do all these things, but you haven't done a single one of them yet.
And it's, you know, it's funny because, you know, here's a president who can clearly use, he can clearly use legislation that he passed, most importantly, health care. But, of course, you have the stimulus package. And you can throw in everything else, you know, on, you can throw anything else that you want to on this president about what it is that he's passed. But this is what it is that I'm saying, is that you had the stimulus package that you passed, a close to $1 trillion bill that you passed. You not only promised that unemployment would not go above 8%, but you promised by this time, 2012, you promised this year at this time that unemployment would be down to 6%. It's at 8.5, 8.6 at best. It's still highest, at the highest that it's ever, ever been this far into a presidency. You passed this bill, and it's done nothing. You also passed what's considered the Democratic sort of benchmark in every Democratic campaign, and that is, you know, mandated health care. And if you want to be a person who is, you know, the president of the United States, and you want to return to that office in the next election, how is it that you don't make health care a key point of legislation that you've passed talking about the State of the Union? Why didn't you bring it up? And the reason why is because of the opposition by the American people of this mandate. It was,
but you know what? As you know, health care is my big, you know, that really is my big issue. So, and you taught me some things yourself, you know, ever since the show has been on and things to that nature. You know, I've been doing a lot of research personally because I was one of those people that just, oh, I'm a Democrat, let me vote Democratic, and I never, you know, researched anything. Oh, that sounds great. Yeah, let's vote him in. He's going to really make a change. That didn't happen. The whole healthcare thing, for those people that are out there listening and those people that agree with this Obamacare and all this other nonsense, hogwash that is being fed to you via the media and via Barack Obama, you better really start looking into all of the nitty-gritty aspects of that healthcare plan, because those people that are employed and believe that they're going to be able to keep their healthcare the way that it is from an employer, you better research, because you will not be able to keep that. You may be able to keep it for a year, but after a year, there are clauses that you will be going into, I forget the word, the verbiage that they used, you will be going into a different type of health care. You will not keep your Blue Cross Blue Shield, your Kaiser.
No, you won't. You won't.
You will not keep that.
I've got a friend. Her daughter lives in North Carolina. She works for the company Wells Fargo. Last year, they told her that pretty much that she was going to be losing her companies or employee health care. And the reason why, it's very simple, and here's the deal, is that if you keep the health care that your employer gives you, and that's what Obama always said, you can keep the health care that you already have. But as it turns out, that the amount of money it's going to cost the company to pay for their employees' health care, it is cheaper to drop the health care and pay a fine than the money that they are asking for by the federal government to continue to give their employees health care. So she got a memo last year, last summer, maybe late summer, early fall, she got a memo that said to her, we are no longer offering you employee health care anymore. You have to go out and find your own. It's cheaper for the company to pay a fine. So here's a guy who says that you're going to get, or you can keep your health care. It'll never, ever be challenged. Turns out to be an absolute lie. And let's not talk about the 1,600 companies, including McDonald's, that got waivers from the federal government so they would not have to purchase this particular health care for a certain amount of time. Pushed it back because in 2014 they would have to pay it and got waivers from the federal government to keep them from having to pay for it. The number's 347-308-8701. Got a call on the line. Who is this?
Hello?
Hey, hello. You're on with Reese on the radio. Who's this?
How you doing? This is Slater.
Hey, what's up, Slater? How are you?
I'm okay. How you doing, Reese?
I'm fine, man. I'm fine. Do you have an opinion? We can go into the pleasantries. I've known Slater for a little bit. Slater, I appreciate it.
Now, listen, you got to give Obama a chance. Bush been in there for 8 years.
No, get off Bush. 3 years of Obama.
I know, but you got to give him a chance to do what he got to do, you know what I'm saying? He can't clean up what he did in only 4 years. You feel me?
What? How is that? I mean, I don't even understand how that even works. You're telling me that he can't clean it up in 4 years. What he needs 8 years in order to do? He passed health care in his first 2 years. He passed the stimulus in his first 2 years. He had a Democratic Senate and he had a Democratic Congress. He got everything he wanted passed in the first 2 years. How did he not get what he wanted done? He got everything he wanted done, and it didn't work.
Well, maybe because people are trying to derail what he's trying to get done.
No. It doesn't happen until January of 2011. January of 2011 is when the Republicans took over the Senate. The Congress. That was when they took over the Congress. He was elected in 2008. Took his office in January of 2009. So in January of 2009 until January of 2011. That's two solid years where Barack Obama had the Senate and the Congress. Congress could have passed any bill they wanted, and they did with the $804 billion stimulus package. They signed health care. They disregarded the Congress and got it passed in a parliamentary move. And got it passed in the Senate. You have health care that goes into effect in 2014. He did nothing for the budget. They haven't had a budget in 1,000 days. There are 365 days in a year. And the Republicans...
I feel you on the health care thing, though. I feel you on that now. That's a little shaky on his behalf. But on everything else from the war, yeah, I feel you on, you know... That money's borrowed, but, you know, it's not his fault. He walked into a bad situation, you know?
Please stop saying it's not his fault. You're talking about fault. When is it his responsibility? When he becomes the president of the United States, it is your responsibility. Everything that happens on your watch is your fault. Everything that happened on Bush's watch, if you want to go back there, everything that happened on Bush's watch was Bush's fault. And you know that.
But
he's doing
the best he's doing of what he got to do. You know what I'm saying? He's making the best of it, you know? It's a bad situation all around.
But he was the guy who wanted the job, Slater. Slater, he's the guy who wanted the job and wanted to do this job and said that he can make it better. Here's the man who said that he was going to lower the sea tides. He was going to raise the earth up from the... Come on, this is... He called him... Even Matt Lauer, there's audio of Matt Lauer interviewing him that people are calling him the Messiah.
Wow.
Yeah, and you know that was. This Obama mania that everyone said that this guy was our new John F. Kennedy, that he was going to be the man to change the world. Things are worse than they ever were 3 years ago. They are worse than
yeah, you,
ever.
You're right on that one, though. You're right. But, you know, I just feel like, you know, who else is out there that's better than him?
What are you – who out there is better than him? Please explain to me how no one in the field is better than him. Who are you talking
about? That's going to run. That's going to run.
Okay, that's going to run. Gingrich is better than him. Gingrich is better than him. Want me to prove it?
Well, I don't doubt you can, but I'm saying I know that I can prove it.
You remember that?
Okay, get it.
Doesn't Clinton get credit for welfare reform?
Yeah.
He vetoed it twice. Gingrich wrote the law. Welfare reform that got people off welfare and on to work. Bill Clinton vetoed it twice. But check anywhere in the media, see who gets the credit. Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton vetoed the bill twice. He vetoed the bill twice because his exact words were, it's not fair to make those people work. His exact
words. Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, of course nobody does. But Newt Gingrich made the contract with America, which is a sweeping government overhaul to change the way it is that we do business. Everything that Bill Clinton got credit for, Newt Gingrich was the arbiter of. He was the architect of. And although they didn't like him in the Republican Party, and there's a reason why they didn't like him because he didn't curry favor with liberal media and with Republicans who wanted liberal favor. Because he was an antagonist. The same way you see him now on the news when he's berating the media and he's talking about how this is a food state, and he's talking about how harsh the language is, that's the reason why they didn't like Newt Gingrich. Because they thought that American people thought that that language was too harsh, was too volatile. Newt Gingrich is a better president than Barack Obama. Why? Because the man has passed sweeping regulations and sweeping legislation that changed the economy and gave President Bush a surplus in 2000 because he balanced the budget 4 years in a row. Ask President Obama whether or not he has a balanced budget. Now, try this on for size. Do you know that the deficit right now is $15 trillion? You know that, right?
Yes.
It's $15 trillion. Now, think about that number, $15 trillion. Let that marinate in your head for a little bit. Do you know how much money Barack Hussein Obama spent in 3 years?
How much?
$5.2 trillion. Now, think that. The federal deficit is $15 trillion. You know, that means how much money the American people have owes since we started the deficit counting. That means that in 3 years, we are a 235-year-old country. And in 3 years, Barack Obama has amassed a third of the federal deficit. That means that from George Washington to George W. Bush, we accumulated $10 trillion. George Washington to President George W. Bush, from George to George, $10 million. Barack Obama has accumulated half that amount in 3 years, and the economy stinks. You tell me.
It is bad. You're right on that. It is very bad.
Explain to me how this president deserves to be reelected.
Explain to me how any president deserves to be reelected, especially Bush.
Bush got reelected, and you know why he got reelected. 9 months into his presidency, September 11th happened, and the unemployment rate was skyrocketed. He brought it down to 4.6%.
Yeah.
Unemployment was over 7% after September 11th.
Unemployment is going down, but not as fast as you would like it, though.
It
you know?
Rose under this administration, Slater. It rose under this administration. By the way, just to give you another statistic, George W. Bush was president for 8 years. There were 14.7 million people. 14.7 million people who ended up on welfare in 8 years. Barack Obama has been president for 3. You want to know how many people ended up getting on welfare in 3 years?
How many?
14.2 million.
Wow.
Need I say more?
No, you got it. You got it. Well, I just want to say congratulations on your show.
Thank you, man. I appreciate
it. And you're doing your thing, and I'll talk to you later.
All All right, man. I appreciate you calling in. The number's 347-308-8701. Thank you, Slater, for calling in. Mary, was there anything else you wanted to add? I mean, is there anything else you could say?
There was so much. There was so much that I wanted to say. But, I mean, you pretty much summed it up, so I'm good. I mean, just, again, I urge our fellow Americans that have the right to vote to educate yourself. No one's up saying that you don't vote for Barack Obama or vote for just go out, vote for Gingrich or vote for whoever comes in as a Republican. This really has nothing to do with Republican or Democrat. In my mind, it has to do with our country and the failure that that we're in right now. So somebody has got to make a difference, and obviously we as the people need to get out there and educate ourselves on the politics, on what is going on, to the little minute details, and vote who you think is going to make a difference in the country, because Barack Obama has not come
just
through
say
with any of the
say
promises
it.
That he has
say
made.
It for me, Mary. Say it for me, Mary. Say he's got to go. Just say he's got to go.
He does. I mean, I'm sorry. And I mean, he's an eloquent, he's an eloquent speaker. He's a good-looking man. He obviously can sing, which we found
just say
out,
it.
You know, last
just
week.
Say it.
But
just say it.
He's
got
to go.
There you go. That's what I want to hear, damn it. That's what I wanted to hear. He's
well, I'm not quite that convinced.
Oh, come on. JC, did you not hear that diatribe?
You know me. I am a Republican. I'm a registered member of the Republican Party. I'm a God-fearing, card-carrying member of the George Bush Party. I'm not going to call him the Republican Party. He's the George Bush Party.
But now, you're going to tell me after the diatribe that I just gave Slater, that entire monologue I just gave Slater, are you going to tell me that in any way that you can still vote for this man? Come on.
I have questions. I have questions for which I still don't have answers. Now, you follow it a lot more closely than I do. I pay more closer attention to local politics.
Fair enough.
Because I understand how the country and the voting process works and where it relates to the laws and who represents us in Washington and what they're required to do. Getting back to the questions that I have, now we're talking about you're talking about the folks that went on to welfare during Obama's watch.
Well,
and that came as a result of the recession, correct?
I will agree with that, yes.
And the recession started when?
The recession started in 2009.
Started in 2009. He just took office in 2009. Now,
January,
yep. Yep. Now, there had to have been some failure somewhere along the line prior to him getting in office for that recession to have been set up. Now, I watch on the news, and I'm listening to a lot of reports with regards to the mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
The mortgages that were given out to people who clearly couldn't afford them.
Mortgage crisis was pretty much the catalyst to why we're dealing with the recession today.
Exactly. Now, who allowed, on whose watch did all those people get those mortgages knowing that they couldn't afford them? Why wasn't this caught any earlier?
William Jefferson Clinton. Want me to break it down for you?
William Jefferson Clinton. So
yeah, I can break that down for you.
You're going to have to break that down for me because
I'll be glad
now you're going to dismiss the total 8 years of these mortgages being passed out
wrong.
George W. Bush, whom I love, Uncle George.
Watch me.
Okay, explain that one to me.
Definitely, I can. I am going to break it down for you so you can understand, and you can look this up for yourself. Now, I'm going to go on a little bit of a tirade here, so I'm going to break this down. So please allow me to flow.
You know what? I'm going to shut my mic off and listen.
Okay. In the 1970s, President Jimmy Carter decided that he was going to start a program called the Community Reinvestment Act. The Community Reinvestment Act, and if anybody knows anything about Jimmy Carter today, Jimmy Carter is a part of Habitat for Humanity, where they build homes for the poor. What he wanted to start was the Community Reinvestment Act, and he started it near the end of his administration. The Community Reinvestment Act was to get poor people into their first homes. The idea was to get people loans that, you know, they could afford. It was affordable housing. So Jimmy Carter never got it passed when a bill was supposed to be passed, and Ronald Reagan became president of the United States, knew that it was fiscally irresponsible, and did not pass the bill. That's why you never, ever heard about it during the Reagan administration. Anyway, when Bill Clinton became president, he doesn't decide to pass the Community Reinvestment Act until 1999. Everybody knows that Bill Clinton was elected in 92, started his presidency in 93. And in 1999, a year before the election where George W. Bush became president, he passed the Community Reinvestment Act. He told his attorney general, Miss Janet Reno, that we need banks to give these loans to people. He wanted it to be sweeping to get poor people into these homes. It was his last rallying call. That he wanted, you know, this wanted to be his last legacy, that he was going to get poor people into his home. So he passes the Community Reinvestment Act. So the banks see this, and they go, so you want us to get poor people into homes? Well, in order for us to do that, which they try to do, they pass legislation trying to get them to get banks to do this. So banks see this law, and they go, okay, we have to start doing, it's sort of like affirmative action. You not only give loans to people who can't afford them, but try to go out there and target some people who want to buy their first home, poor minorities. So you go out there and you find out that this isn't working. The people that you're putting into these homes, they can't afford it, and they're foreclosing very quickly. So they're telling the government, they go and tell the government, look, this isn't working. We're losing money. We cannot do this. So Janet Reno turns around and threatens them legally. They say, if you do not do this, we will send the White House press corps after you. That means the New York Times, Washington Post, every other newspaper, the LA Times. We will take them to task, take you to task, and we will put it in there. We will discrimination for not giving these people a loan. So they tell them that we will threaten you. So the banks turn around and they go, well, now they're making this a law, and they threaten us with civil litigation. They're threatening with calling us racist. So what does the bank do? The banks turn around and go, well, wow, we don't want to be deemed as racist. This is going to help hurt us in the long run. So what do? The banks do what it is that they do best as a business. They protect themselves. Now, they go in there and they meet Mr. Johnson or Mr. Miller, and they tell Mr. Johnson and Mr. Miller, hey, you don't have enough money or equity. You don't have enough money, or you don't have a collateral to actually buy this home. So you know what it is we'll do? We'll cheat the sheet. We'll turn around and we'll say that you make $70,000 when you only make $40,000. We'll say you make $60,000 when you only make $30,000. And we make up these forces. They called it predatory lending because they went after poor people. It can't be called predatory when the federal government has forced you to do it. It's not predatory. You're being told, go out there and find these people and get them their first home. Protect my legacy. So the banks, what do? They know that these people can't afford these loans, and the paper that it's printed on is worth zero. So the banks are worried about what? Their shareholders, the most important people in their businesses. Now, is it right for them to do what they did? Because I'm not protecting the banks. The banks were low down and dirty for doing what it is that they did. But they did it to protect their business because they were forced to. So they're forced into these illegal practices. But, again, illegal. So the banks are very, very culpable for what it is that they did. But my friend, JC, if I take a cell phone from Mary and give it to you and I say, hey, I just stole this from Mary, you want it, and you take the cell phone, you are now an accessory to that burglary. So even though those people signed over those contracts, see, what Barack Obama uses is elusive language. It was predatory lending. But he fails to make the consumer culpable. If somebody told you we're going to lie on this application and says you make more money than you do so that you can get this house, you stole that house too, customer. So there were two people responsible. And that's how it happened. And now, going into the Bush administration, when George W. Bush realized that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the people who put out that legislation, I mean the people who were putting out the most of those loans, he saw something wrong with that. He sent 15 separate regulators to the White House, to the Senate, the Congress subcommittee. Those regulators who got on the stand, I have the audio on my website, PopCulturaRadio.com to go see it yourself. Guys like Calvin Meeks, Maxine Waters, Barney Frank said that George W. Bush going after Franklin Raines, appointed by Bill Clinton, a black man, that George W. Bush going after Franklin Raines, the head of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, going after him was racist on George W. Bush's part by going after this black man who's trying to get poor people's homes. 15 separate regulators tried to stop Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And Calvin Meeks, I have the audio and the video from YouTube on my website. Go look it up. And they cited those regulators in the Bush administration as being racist against Franklin Raines. And they did nothing, and George W. Bush backed off like a punk because he did not want to lose favor with the American people. And why? Because in 2005, when Hurricane Katrina hit Louisiana, people like Kanye West called the president racist, doesn't like black people. George W. Bush was often, that administration was called often as racist and racist and racist and racist. And going after Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac would have been a futile mission, because anything to regulate what was about to happen would have been deemed racist. And what did the Democrats do that were running the House and Senate in 2006 say? It doesn't matter. They're going to blame it on Bush anyway. And that's who got the blame, because it happened on his watch, even though the legislation was passed. Bill Clinton, Janet Reno.
Okay. Now, based on what you said, and it's something I haven't checked out to be fact myself, but I don't know you to be a liar or a twister of the truth when it comes to politics, because you know your stuff. If that happened on on Bush's watch, and he is a president, does he not take responsibility for it?
Again,
the fact that he was a punk.
And what did he do?
The fact that he was a punk.
He took responsibility, JC. He's never, ever disputed those claims. You notice he wrote a book. He wrote a book, and in his book, he never, ever talks about the housing crisis. He never, ever discusses how he wasn't culpable. He didn't fight hard enough to stop it, and he takes full responsibility because it happened on his watch. He even takes full responsibility for September 11th. He never blamed Clinton for not getting Osama bin Laden in 1996 when he had the chance. He took responsibility. Because everybody knows Bill Clinton had Osama bin Laden in his sight. And
sights, right. Ryan, he refused to go get him.
He refused to get him.
Instead, he shot a couple missiles into a couple empty tents, into a couple
right.
children's mosques.
They had a beat on him. They had face recognition on him, and he didn't pull the trigger. But Bush never, ever blamed September 11th on William Jefferson Clinton. Never. Not his
Great.
Stuff. Go ahead.
Great. So before we get off the whole housing thing, I used to work for a home builder, and if you can explain maybe in better words than I can about the whole, you know, what I saw was, because our whole company ended up getting laid off, and we had to shut our doors, the entire company. And at one point, we couldn't build houses fast enough. We couldn't acquire land fast enough. I mean, we were just going and going and going, working like dogs, trying to build houses and acquire more land to build more houses, more communities. And then all of a sudden, it was like, boom, just everything was gone. But that has to do a lot with,
What year was that, Mary, if I may ask? What year was that when everything crashed?
It was 2006, between 2006 and 2007, I want to say.
And that was when the market was crashing. That was when the housing market was falling apart.
Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. That's when everything crashed. That's when everything was just going downhill. But that also had to do with, you know, the mortgage companies offering people these, I can't remember the exact terms, but like you would you know, you buy this house, you put X amount of money down, you know, we were selling houses at $500,000 and better, and most of the time it was better than $500,000. It was almost like there was a fad. It was like, you know, everybody wanted to have the biggest house with the biggest backyard with, you know, the best of things. And these people were buying houses and living in empty homes because they could not afford to buy furniture to fill the home.
But again, Mary, what that was, and I can explain it to you fully, what it was consumerism run amok. That's exactly what it was. It was consumerism run amok. I'm sorry, I put JC on when I shouldn't have. James is on the line with us. James, I know you've got plenty to say, so I'm going to give you a couple of minutes to do it before we go to the top of the hour and we end this topic. Sorry I kept you on hold for so long. But
we cannot end this topic.
No, I know. We got so much other stuff to get into. But go ahead, James, I'm sure you have an opinion. Is he not there? Okay, maybe he's not there.
Did you mute him?
No, I had him up on the air. Maybe he put the phone down.
My question to you was, maybe you can explain it better, maybe you have the correct verbiage to use, but these mortgage companies were giving people loans. You know, they had a set mortgage payment of maybe, you know, $1,500 for the first, you know, year, the first 2 years, and then the third
right.
year or whatever, however it was planned out, all of a sudden your mortgage has doubled or tripled.
Right. That's exactly. Okay, so here's what it was. And what it was what these loans were, and it was very, very simple what it is that they did. The original refinancing, that was the whole deal that they were doing. This refinancing loan was, there was a, and I know the term and it's going to come to me, but you're exactly right. The idea was, you're going to get this loan at this set percentage where it's going to cost you $400-$500 a month to pay back your mortgage. Okay, this is what it's going to be for 4 or 5 years. While you own the home, this will give you 4 years to accumulate enough money, save enough money, so after the 4 years, your mortgage payment will then double to meet that rate, to meet the new rate. So it was going to double to $1,000, maybe even $1,200 after 4 years had passed. So this refinancing that they had done, and that's pretty much what it was a refinance loan, was they were refinancing or flipping the financing within the first 4 years. So you are only paying a small amount of money in the first couple of years. When 4 years comes down the road, it doubles. It triples in some cases. But they were telling people, don't worry about it, because 4 years down the road, you'll either have flipped the house or you saved enough money to meet the. And what happened was, these people didn't flip the house because the bubble burst. They were stuck with the home and couldn't make the payments. So in four or five years, we got 4.5 million people foreclosing on homes. I mean, it was literally like a big, giant boom, like a bubble burst. It didn't pop, it burst. And
believe me, I know, because me and every other person that worked for our company felt the wrath of that. You know, we had like 3 sets of layoffs. I survived the first set, I was in the second set, and then the last set was closing the doors. So,
again,
you know, and we were making money hand over fist.
And, again,
unbelievable.
And a part of that was, James, are you with us now?
Yes.
Okay. Part of that was, Mary, a part of that was, and what happened with that was, it wasn't so much, and I think that this is a great way to pretty much express what happened, was this was government intervention into something they had no business. People should be able to buy homes that they when they can afford it, by having a government mandate telling banks go out there and give loans or give houses to people who couldn't afford them because it was part of some socialist idea. You know, Bill Clinton doing that was sort of like saying, I want to do something good for the people. There should never be government intervention on something as dire and important as owning a home. And this is where the government needs to realize that they cannot intervene on issues like that. We can't have them telling us how to eat. You can't have them telling us what to buy or when to buy. You cannot have the government do that. And that's what Bill Clinton did, and that whole structure collapsing the way it did upon government intervention. James, go ahead. James, I'm sure you have an opinion.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I'm here. I'm listening, and I'm stunned from some of the things that I've heard. I mean, according to you, George W. Bush had to be the most put upon president ever. I mean, he just did nothing but sit back and have it all heaped on his shoulders. Really? Well, then he shouldn't have been in the big chair in the first place.
I didn't suggest that. That's a suggestion.
According to you, everything has been with everyone else, and it was okay. Well, you know, he just happened to be there when it all hit the fan.
Well, he was, James. He was there when it hit the fan.
And hold on, if that is
there's
the case,
no dispute.
If that's the case, then why is everyone saying now? I'm not a George Bush fan, George Bush Jr. I'm in no way, shape, or form a fan of his. I think he was a moron. Nothing about him appeals to me. But except the fact that he was very funny to listen to because he's such a moron.
Please get to
but
your point.
if that is the case, then that's the same thing that everyone is saying about Barack.
Oh,
if you're disputing what
you.
Reese is saying about
thank
Bush,
you
must you
thank
you cannot
you.
Turn around and say the same thing about Barack Obama
and
that everything
exactly.
was just put on him
thank
that he shouldn't
you.
Have taken that seat either.
You know what? Hold on. Stop for a second, James. That's exactly
yeah.
what Slater said. That's exactly what Slater said when he called. Slater made all of that stuff. Now, when I even suggested, I'm wrong. But everyone can say that about Barack Obama. He inherited all of this. But President Bush inherited stuff, too. But time did I suggest that
okay.
he did try to stop
it. But the thing is, all right, he might have inherited some stuff, of course. Well, every president does, all right? That's no one's disputing that, okay? But again, here it is. When we say that, it's because you guys are always trying to put everything on that one man, all right? But when it comes to George Bush, it's okay. Well, he just inherited it.
No,
right?
George W. Bush is just as responsible. Just like I explained to Slater that Barack Obama spent $5.2 trillion. George W. Bush spent $4 trillion in 8 years. So his responsibility is almost a third as well of the deficit that we're in. Under George W.
It just took him 8 years versus three.
8 years took it versus three. That's a valid point. All of those things are extremely valid points. And you know, people refuse to take that into consideration. Again, George W. Bush has never, ever used the previous administration in his speeches. He never, ever once said the previous administration. I've got Barack Obama's transcripts from the last three, the last two, and this one, State of the Union Address. And five times he mentions the last administration. George W. Bush never did that. Never did that. It's unheard of, and no one ever does it. And no one's ever done it in the history of presidencies. They're not supposed to do it. Not only is it unethical, it's childish. If you want to be the big man in the big chair, be the big man in the big chair and take responsibility. He's never done that, Barack Obama, and he won't do it. And neither one of his supporters will do it as well. Jamie, I would get into this a lot longer, but I got to tell you, we've got much bigger fish to fry. Much bigger fish.
All right.
There are no bigger fish to fry than this one, Reese.
Well, give him time. Maybe he will. Maybe give him time. Give him time. He hasn't given him time to accept responsibility.
Yes. Give him time. I'm hoping that he'll accept responsibility. And guess what? If he loses, I want him to say the American people have spoken and they weren't satisfied with what it is that he's done.
And you're going to apologize.
Not only
what he hasn't done, because that is the issue.
I want to know if he'll sing Let's Stay Together then. Let's go to the top of the hour.
I'm so in love with you.
All right, top of the hour.
Television is a goddamn amusement park. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We're in the boredom-killing business. So if you want the truth, go to God. Go to your gurus. Go to yourselves. Because that's the only place you're ever going to find any real truth. So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off right now. Turn them off and leave them off. Turn them off right in the middle of a sentence I'm speaking to you now. Turn them off.
Come on.
All the humanity. All the...
Mary had a little lamb in Jesus' white as snow, and everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool.
I never once said, na-da-da.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you.
Welcome back, folks. We are here. It's Reese on the radio just after 8:01 on Eastern Standard Time. It's January the 25th, 2012. And, you know, it's very, very rare when we take an entire hour, we don't take a commercial break. But, you know, I didn't think that the presidential politics would actually extend that long. But it usually does, and I give it to my guys because we're very, very passionate about that, and people have their opinions, and I'm probably more passionate than anyone, primarily because I really want this guy out of office, and for a host, and not just because I'm a Republican, because I'm an American and I understand American values, and I understand him in a way that a lot of people can't probably gather or fathom, or, you know, that's fine, but that's what I am. And I'm very, very passionate about politics and about this particular presidency. And I have been for a long time. I'm more so today than I've ever been. But moving on, speaking of, you know, passion, I'm passionate about racism. And it's racism all the time on Reese on the Radio. And that's always going to be what this show is about. Until racism ceases, which it never will, because it has to exist. It has to live, because it always has something to feed off of. And when it's there, we discuss it, because it's hot. It's a hot topic. And again, I go back to Attorney General Eric Holder. Said, you know, there needs to be a time when we have a frank discussion as Americans about race. And I talk about it. And a lot of people say that they're not, I'm not afraid to talk about race. Yes, you are. You're a little bit, you know, a little bit spooky. You're a little spooked out by it. But I am not. So for anyone out there, just know that we're going to talk about it in a frank way that you can be involved. Don't be afraid. There's nothing to be afraid of here. I don't care whether or not you don't like Latinos, Negroes, Chinese people, Asian people, whatever it is. I don't care if you don't like them. Come on over here and discuss it. This is your forum. I'm not going to get angry at you. I'll admit, my panel may. But I will protect you. Your freedom of speech is protected here. As long as you don't use any foul language, and as long as you don't use any derogatory terms, but there are things that you don't like about a certain race, come on down. I'll let you voice your opinions. And they'll be challenged. That's the thing. People don't want to be challenged. Well, let me get into the topic. So tonight, on the cable network TV One, Essa Patha Murkison is doing a special with Chris Cuomo of Nightline and 2020 and ABC News. It's a TV show called Find Our Missing. And I've not seen the show yet. It's going to air tonight at 10 o'clock. I might check it out. I'm thinking about maybe DVRing it or something. Maybe I'll check it out. But it's talking about black people who have been missing, who have not received mainstream media attention. And I guess TV One, being a black-owned network, they're also owned by Radio One, which is a black-owned company. To pay some sort of attention to these black people who have been missing and maybe delve into why mainstream media is not dealing with it. Today, Chris Cuomo and Esipatha Murkison were on The View. And the question was asked to Chris Cuomo, why is it, or what could be the reason, that mainstream media is not covering the missing African Americans in the country? Why it has not received the information like, Kaylee Anthony? I'm probably getting that wrong. Is it Casey Anthony? Well, whatever. Those missing white children, Elizabeth Smart, stories like that, Natalie Holloway? Those stories bombard mainstream media all the time. So I'm looking for this audio, and I apologize because I should have had it right in front of me. What Chris might be the reason why black people are not covered in the media as much as whites.
There are a lot of problems with the media. Some of them play into attention span, attractability of who we put on TV, what we believe will motivate our audience.
Right.
And a lot of the times the judgments are wrong.
Right.
And we focus on people. You say that they're white, and they are. And there could be several reasons for that. Sometimes they're atrocious. There are more white people than anyone else in the country. So you're going to have a higher collection. Sometimes it's how incredible the story is, but often it's because they look good to the media who want to put them on.
Right.
And, you know, it sounds sinister, and it doesn't need to be until it becomes exclusionary.
And yeah, he goes on to say until it becomes exclusionary of a certain group. And he suggests, in essence, that it's not sinister on the part of the media until it becomes exclusionary. Is Chris Cuomo in any way saying that it is exclusionary? He does not say that. He does not admit that. I don't know why, but he doesn't. He doesn't admit that. I don't think that he believes that it is in some way exclusionary, so that's probably why he didn't say it. But the fact is that there aren't a lot of black people covered in the media when they are missing. And I know the reason why. There are people who do not agree, who won't agree with what I'm about to say. That's why I'm saving it. Because I'm going to ask the crew what it is that they believe. Now, I'm going to be honest with you, folks. I'm going to let them speak. But I'm going to tell you right off the bat, I know what each and every one of them is going to say. I know exactly why it is that they believe that the media doesn't cover them. I know they're going to say the exact things that are sitting in my mind and, unfortunately, going to miss the mark. Be close. Going to miss the mark. So I'm going to go to first and go with James first, then JC, and let the white woman speak. Let's see what their interpretation of why it is that mainstream media does not black people when they're JC, you want to go first? No, Jamie, I apologize. James, you want to go first?
Actually, I didn't want to say anything, okay, because I'm really, if I can just take a little time out here, I'm really getting tired of being told that you already know what I'm about to say before I say it. And
oh, come on.
Already have the whole conversation all done, you don't need my help. Go ahead.
James, that's just the thing that I do. I'm just kidding around. Don't be so defensive. I'm just kidding around.
Oh, no, you don't need my help. Go ahead.
Oh, come on. I do need your help. I want your opinion. I'm goading you into saying, oh, he thinks I know what I'm thinking. It's encouragement. seriously, what is your view? Why do you think that mainstream media does not cover African-Americans in this scope? Do you agree with Chris Cuomo, and do you believe that there is something sinister? What's your view?
My view is that I believe there is something sinister, because when it comes down to things like that, the white America is put in more of a sympathetic light. More often than not, when you do see black people on camera, they're either throwing up gang signs, or it just seems to be the most derogatory or stereotypical are put right out in the mainstream or right in front of the camera, when I'm sure there are other people around who could at least string a sentence together without saying, you know what I mean, or things of that nature. So, yeah, I believe it is sinister, and I believe it is purposeful.
You think it's purposeful?
Yes, because for some reason it just seems that white people are more sympathetic than black people.
Okay, I'll take that into consideration. I think, one, you are right, it is sinister. You're dead on there. I agree with you 100%. It is sinister. What is the what's the origins of that sinister behavior? I will definitely tell you. JC, let's get your view. Do you believe what do you believe in this case?
Okay, I believe it is sinister. And I believe it is purposeful.
I'm sorry, James.
I believe that it is simply because they don't cover minorities, simply because America and the TV watching public, by large, is of the viewers, I should say, are Caucasian. I think it has everything to do with ratings. I think that they're more apt to watch more coverage of a white child that's missing as opposed to a black child. Whereas the black child will mostly interest those in the hood. Now, if you're a local television channel, the low power television stations, then obviously you would cater to those that are in your that's in your area, the demographic and what you cover. But as far as like going national, you know, more whites that watch that type of news and coverage than you do blacks. So I think it has everything to do with more ratings than anything.
Okay, JC, you are very, very right. You are so close to why it is. You are right there. A huge part of it is ratings. Huge part of it is ratings. Mary, do you wish to jump in? Hold on, let's get Mary.
Folks are too nosy. I think that white folks are too nosy and should stop watching so much damn news and getting involved in everything. No.
Well, they know on those commercial breaks they can throw those Starbucks ads in there and all that good stuff. Yeah.
Ford F-150
commercials.
Right. Go ahead.
I think that as unfortunate as it is, I think that JC, I would have to agree with JC that it probably is more about ratings than anything else. But that's very, very sad and disgusting, because it doesn't matter what color you are, what religious background you come from, what financial demographic you come from or you fall into, if there's a child missing or if there is a child that's been murdered, or if, you know, any of these cases that have been going on, like the Casey Anthony case and so on, that should get coverage. It should get national coverage regardless. These are children that we're talking about.
Okay. Folks, I want you to get ready for the harshest truth you've ever heard.
Oh, brother.
Okay? I want you to get ready for the harshest truth you've ever heard. me a favor, JC. Time stamp this 15 so that we can go back and we can record. I can tape it and record it later because I want to put this on a promo. The real reason why African Americans are not covered in mainstream media about missing or lost people is because to the mainstream media, you do not count until you benefit them. You are of no benefit to mainstream media, Black America. You never will be. NBC, ABC, CNN, Fox News, no matter what the mainstream media is, you do not benefit them. JC was 100% right when he said it is about ratings. You do not contribute to their bottom line. You do not buy the products on television that they show. You do not buy the Tides and the Cuddles or whatever it is, the Oreos or the Who News. Or the you don't buy that. You are not the primary target. You are not the JCPenney. You are not the Kmart. You are not the Walmarts. You are not the Walgreens customer. You are not the people that are attracted to the customer, pardon me, to the clientele that they bring in as advertisers. They know that when they put you on the screen, they know that the people who will buy those products and watch those commercials will turn the screen if they see your black face on it. They do not care about you until it benefits. That is why mainstream media has no interest in you. They only want when you dig into your pockets and give to them. You have no stake in their overall bottom line. And no one is going to care because you are not involved. They know that you will scream racism. And when you do, they will show up at your BS protest. When they know that you are outraged, they will show up to watch you stand out there and scream and holler about how underprivileged you are. Because once you become privileged, there's no story to cover. Once you benefit, who wants to cover you anymore? You're only ratings when you're in need. That is the bottom line of what it is that mainstream media will always be. When you are in need, that they know that they will get ratings for. Someone called you racist? Cover that story. Somebody called you the N-word? Cover that story. You got a missing black chick? She probably ran away. You got a missing black dude? Probably ran off with another woman. Got a missing black child? She probably went to a friend's house. Because she don't like the food you serve. Or she thinks you beat her. All of those things are the reasons why that they don't cover you. You never make the front page. Because you're not profitable to them. Because you're not a part of the mainstream. Aha! You're not a part of the mainstream, ladies and gentlemen, in the black community. You're never going to be a part of the mainstream. If you can't stop talking about how you're black and you're different, how are they going to accept you as one of them? They run the media, and they're going to keep putting their own. Who needs 48 million black, pardon me, who needs 40 million black people when I got 211 million whites? Who needs you? If you're going to keep identifying yourself as different, I'm black, I'm brown, I'm this, I'm that. That's the reason why you get no burn. That's why you have to make your own TV ones and radio ones and BETs. Because you don't want to be a part of the mainstream because you keep setting yourself aside from it. So don't be upset that nobody wants to cover you. Don't be upset that Now all of a sudden your kid's missing. You want the media to recognize you as just like everybody else. Well, how am I supposed to recognize you as everybody else when you keep identifying yourself with being black first? How are you American? But you can't stop talking about being black first. Oh, what I know you're going to scream about the Jews. But the Jews don't need them either. See, the Jews have never needed mainstream America. They don't care. Because they take care of their own. They'll flip off mainstream America before they acquiesce to it. Because they are solid in their culture. They only scream discrimination when it comes to their doorstep. When you come directly at me, that's when we scream discrimination. We don't hold stupid protests about, can we get a cultural center? We don't hold protests because somebody used the word nappy-headed hoe on a BS radio show. That's the reason why. You've staked no claim. You make an argument about some of the most ridiculous things that happen in the world that involve African Americans. Those are the platforms you stand on. Oh, because a GPS app doesn't want people to go into your neighborhood, so they direct them away with a GPS app, and the NAACP jumps out. We're appalled. When race baiting becomes nothing more than a money-making scheme, what makes you think that anybody wants to be a part of that or incorporate that into mainstream America? You're never going to get the coverage of your black people missing. You want to be black? You want to set yourself aside? Go find them yourself. That's their response to you. And I'll be the first to say it. You deserve it. Now, that is an open and frank discussion on race. And I don't care if you don't like it. Because the truth is always supposed to make you angry. But only when you're not willing to face it. We'll bring back in the crew and see whether or not I'm out of my mind. Hey, buddy,
I'm speechless after that.
Somebody, come on, somebody.
Name, you ignorant slut. Do you work at being this dense, or does it just come naturally?
It comes naturally, damn it.
I bet it does, because, I mean, I know you. You know, you're pretty lazy, so you can't be working at this.
Very good. Go on. Tell me. Come on, please.
All right. But the thing is, man, first and foremost, the whole concept about how we're the only ones who make us different is a farce.
Wrong, James. Wait.
What?
Before you go any further. Hold on, before you go any further. I never said you are the only ones. I'm only addressing black people. Latinos are another show. And
Wait. I am only talking about black people.
Oh, I'm only talking about black people.
Yeah,
but you said we are the only ones. Don't make an argument about anybody else.
I said we are the only ones. Wait. Okay.
Yeah,
all right, fine. Again, you've got the whole thing down.
Go ahead. I said we are the only ones. I'm not talking about anybody else. I'm just talking about blacks. If you have a disagreement with what it is that I say, just deal with what it is.
I was trying to do that, but every time I try to get a word out.
Go on. I apologize. Go on.
Forget it.
Forget it. I need your opinion.
I'm done.
Oh, you're done. You're kidding me. You're going to hang up? He hung up. JC, your opinion.
Wow. Do I have an opinion? Wow. Okay. It is truth. I probably wouldn't have said it as harsh as you did, although I was thinking it.
Okay.
But I mean, had they relied on Family Dollar, Dollar Tree, Save a Lot. C-Town for advertising. I mean, that's where I'm not going to say that that's where we shop at, because we have to. But we're realistically the most conservative race in the country.
Absolutely, African Americans are more conservative than most groups.
Yeah,
most.
Yeah, we hold on to that dollar to the eagle holler.
Exactly, but
I don't believe that.
No, no, we do. Think of it. What he's saying is, conservative.
It's not that you hold on. It's not that you hold on to that dollar. Because I won't even say that. You may not spend it in areas. You may spend those dollars in different areas.
No. We like a bargain.
Who doesn't like a bargain?
Black, white, blue, green, purple. What's that?
Who doesn't like a bargain? I'm white, and I like a good bargain.
I don't know what that's supposed to mean. Well, I mean, I understand what he's saying. He's saying that we are more conservative with our money than most people are. We're more conservative with the way that we spend our money. That's what he's saying, saving a buck. He's actually saying what it is that you're agreeing to. He said that we are more conservative. As people, African Americans are much more conservative than most people.
And those, when it comes to getting your hair and your nails done,
you ain't.
Well, okay. You're right.
Buying jewelry and I'm not saying that there's no racist, you know, in that statement at all. There's no racism because everyone knows that I am not a racist. But I mean, you may save something at the grocery store, but you only save it so you can go get your hair done and your nails done so you can look good for the weekend.
Well, again,
exactly. That understood. Taking exactly what you said, Damien. I love when you go down this road. You don't see CBS during the middle of the day when my soap operas are on. Yeah, I do watch soap operas, and they come through with a news break. Or an emergency situation on the news where some child is missing or they have an Amber Alert.
Amber Alert, yep.
Yeah, when they go to that break and that Amber Alert, they're going to come back with more in the story. You never, ever see Black Pearls, Pig Feet, Ponytail Parlor commercials at that time.
Never do. And they're getting that mainstream American market. The bottom line is, and I know, Mary, a lot of people have a hard time with hearing what it is that I'm saying, but again, that's even the reason why James, in essence, had to cut himself off, because I know why he had to cut off both, because he knows he may not like it, but it's very, very true what it is that I'm saying. You want to marginalize yourself, and that's what African Americans do in our communities and across the country. They marginalize.
Well, that's where I kind of have an issue too.
Well,
I believe that we kind of marginalize ourselves, not saying that we bring racism upon ourselves.
Oh, no. That's not marginalization. Marginalization is having to always preface the fact that you're black. Always have to remind everyone that you're a part of some different group of people, that you're not a part of America. People always say that. You know, people don't say that. You know, people, we like this.
Race.
You know,
we're reminded of it even on job applications.
Well, even if you are, but that's not what I'm talking about. Job applications are so different than what it is that we do as in our personal and public lives. As a public lives, we often have it, JC, and it may not be you and I independently, but you know that is something that people are always sort of clinging to. They cling on to their blackness as if it's something so different from everyday people. When black people say, I take care of my kids, how is that foreign? That's not foreign. I pay my bills on time. How is that foreign? You know, we talk about ourselves in this, you know how they always say you talk about yourself in second person? We talk about ourselves in second humanity. We talk about ourselves in such a way that all of a sudden, we're so different from average human beings. Being black makes us separate.
If I can jump in here, I just want to. There's something that when I moved. So everybody knows that I was born, raised, and grew up in New York, and then I moved to Virginia. live right outside of Washington, D.C. So there is something that I experienced here that I never experienced all the years that I was in New York. Race is talked about more here, and when people around here are talking it and they're telling you a story, it's like, oh, yeah, you know, I was talking to Lisa. I was talking to this black chick, Lisa. Or, oh, yeah, I was talking to this white chick, Angela. Or, you know, something happened with this white dude, Brian. Or something happened with this black. Or something happened with this Mexican. Or something happened with this. They label everybody here in this area, at least labels everybody. I don't know if people are doing that in New York now, but I know that coming up as a kid, and I grew up in a predominantly black neighborhood, but we did have a lot of Hispanics. There were Greeks in the neighborhood. We were Irish. It was predominantly black, but there was other cultures there. So I grew up in a multicultural area. Went to school in a multicultural environment. So I learned about different people from different places in the country and different places in other countries. At a very young age, and we never, ever talked about, it was never an issue, we never labeled one another, it was never, you know, oh, this is, you know, that's Mary the white girl, or, you know, this is, you know, this is Princess the black girl, we never talked about that, and when I moved here, it's something that people talk about all the time, and it's amazing to me that people label each other like that so close to the Capitol. And I don't understand it. Maybe this is something that's happening everywhere.
There's a reason why they do it. And again, it's this, again, the state of the union that we're in today. It's the way the world is today. We have to marginalize each other. We have to keep, this one's this, that one's that. Respect that I'm black. Respect that I'm Asian. Respect that I'm, you know, again, it's always going to be an issue. It has to be an issue in order to do what? Because it's the victimization syndrome that we have. It's this victimization syndrome. The part of that show that's going to come on today, Find Our Missing, in and of itself alienates themselves by calling it Find Our Missing. These are all of our missing. Your children missing are as important to me as anybody else. There's no such thing as our missing. They're all of our children missing.
Yeah, but on the same token, because we're not covered in mainstream media for reasons of ratings, we'd have to create our own.
Well, how
else are we going to get ours out there?
Okay, there's a way to get it out there. And the way to get it out there is stop it with the race baiting. Stop. Get rid of people like your Al Sharptons and your Jesse Jacksons.
And your NAACP's, and stop calling ourselves African Americans and call ourselves Americans.
Call ourselves Americans. Get rid of this thing. Get rid of these labels. You got to get rid of places like. You got to get rid of places like Hispanic cultural centers. Got to get rid of these places. Got to get rid of them because as soon as you. You know, when we ask everybody, I can't treat you people have marginalized yourself.
I don't agree with get rid of the cultural centers and things like that, because that's one of the beautiful things that make this country as beautiful as it is, having diverse cultures in it.
No. We could have plenty of cultures in it. That's true. We can have plenty of traditions within our groups, but those groups are literally. The conditioning of each and every one of those groups, the origins of every one of those groups, has something to do with being antagonists in some way or activists in some way. We want our fair share. We want our civil rights. We want our equality. It's never about we're just like everybody else. We're equal. It's always about antagonizing another group. To accept them, and what do they use their power or their platform for? To ostracize a group not accepting them. They're never there advancing colored people when colored people are shooting themselves.
You're breaking up, dude, Chief.
I'm saying, where are these groups when there's crime or bad behavior happening within their own. There is no coverage. There is no protest. There is no mission to stop what's going on within the groups when they attack themselves. Again,
I beg to differ.
I don't see.
I mean, it depends on where you are, because we have a lot of rallies up here, and we have a lot of and although you say we don't need them, and that is activists, but that are holding these I don't want to call them rallies, but yeah, well, I guess you can call them rallies, because they even march up here I don't want to say start snitching platform, but it's like, if you see something, say something.
So?
That's the only way that we're going to get rid of the crime in the neighborhood. We have a couple people up here that I kind of admire them for the work that they're doing, in terms of when there's four or five shootings in a weekend and three of them are of teenagers that have gotten killed, where you have black people marching in these neighborhoods in their own neighborhoods where these things are going on.
And what changes?
Nothing really changes. I mean, what's going to have to happen is that obviously we're going to need more policing in these neighborhoods, more education in these neighborhoods to educate these kids and get their minds off of this easy money out here that they're trying to maintain. Or something else to change their ideals or morals to cut this crap out.
As soon as people stop dealing with these young people, with the whole, you know, with the origins of you're black and you need to be like this and you need to act like that and all that. Once you start talking about people being a part of the mainstream, that you don't win with this whole black behavior crap, or trying to be authentic. There's no such thing as authentically black. It never existed. It's a myth. It's a freaking myth. And trying to live up to those standards will only lead you down a road of hell. And it does for every one of them. And again, like I said, the reason why they're being ignored is because they've marginalized yourself. And, you know, the mainstream media says, hey, you got your own network. Put it on there. That's exactly why mainstream media said, hey, what am I going to air it for? Put that stuff on BET. That's what you got BET.
It's like you want to segregate yourself, but when other people segregate you, if there's a problem. And
again, you're right.
What everybody in this country needs to do is we are all individuals, and we all, if you believe in God and you believe that God created all of us equal. I will bleed the same way you bleed if you get cut or if I get cut. I don't look at people for the color of their skin. I don't judge them off the color of their skin. I don't want to be judged off the color of my skin. I don't want to be judged off of the way that I act or the way that I might speak. And a lot of times, personally for me, I am. I hear all my girlfriends, even people at work. You know, I had a girl the other day tell me, oh, girl, you ain't white, you black. No, I'm not. I mean, I'm just me. I am just Mary. I'm not trying to be somebody that I'm not, or that, you know, society says that you normally would not act like this, or you normally wouldn't speak like this, or whatever. I am just who I am. This is Mary. This has nothing to do
you
with.
Just stay bugging.
wanting to act what society says is acting black, or wanting to be, as society says, acting white, or anything like that. I am just who I am, and everybody needs to just be their own individual and allow people to judge them based on their character.
But
stop trying to segregate from ethnic groups or from religious groups or from any of that, because we are all equal when it comes down to it. All of us are one of the same. Just because the only difference is that you have more melanin in your skin than I do.
That's exactly right.
You're right. You're right. But and this is turning to a totally different argument about race. It's a conversation that everybody that we talked about that needs to be had. I mean, the bottom line is they don't cover black missing in the news for purposes of
profit.
Their bottom line, and that's
yeah,
their advertising.
Exactly. It is purpose and a profit. But again, like I said, it's, you know, look, if black people would stop segregating themselves by saying, I watch the game, and I watch Girlfriends, and I watch, this quote-unquote black appropriate thing, you know, eat, segregate themselves. And media outlet is pretty much said to itself, look, they've got their own outlet to cover their own stuff. We don't have to do anything for them. We don't have to do. They've got their own outlet. They've got their own they've got their own avenues and vehicles to promote that stuff. Let them.
Yeah, we got own.
And we got our
now,
own.
Now, what would happen? What would happen? You know, this is growing up in the financial situation that I grew up in. You know, my mother could not afford to put us through college. She could not afford to do a lot of things for us that we wish she would have been able to afford to. You know, there was no, you know, Caucasian American College Fund. There was no, you know, there was none of that. And I don't say, you know, and this isn't to say anything bad, but, it, you know, I often question that, like, and if there was, that would be a problem.
Oh, of course.
You know, there would be a riot off of that. There would be a riot if there was WET, White Entertainment Television.
Yes, of course.
You know, but why is it okay for black people and for Latino people to segregate themselves?
Because they are the minority, and as long as you're a minority, and as long as we keep promoting that you are a minority, give you what we consider standards in this. And again, if you wish to marginalize yourself, we'll allow you to do it. You want to marginalize yourself? You want to say that you're not a part of the mainstream? We'll allow you to do that. We will acquiesce to exactly what it is you want. You want Univision and Telemundo? Not a problem. Give it to them. They'll watch their shows. We don't have to market to them over on our network because they're watching Telemundo and Univision. You don't want to watch our shows. You don't like the fact that Friends doesn't have any white cast members. You can go over there to BET and you can watch any one of the shows you want. You can go over there to Logo because we don't have enough gay characters on our television show. Go over to Logo. You know, that's the reason why they do that. When only time,
I watch shows on every single channel you just mentioned.
But the reason why, but the
all
reason
right.
why Will and Grace could be as successful as they are and then immediately flop, that is to be a profitable market at the time. People like NBC, gay, really popular right now. Character, two main characters who were gay, these, and will create some sexual tension. And Will and Grace comes out. The gay community rushes over to NBC to go watch the show. And then what happens? The show ends up plummeting years later. Plummeting. Sean Hayes can't get a job, can't get arrested. Deborah Messing. She's on a new show called MASH. Where's she been for years? Where are these people? And again, the whole bottom line is that the only time they ever care about you as a minority is when you become either cliche or you become the fad of the day. All right? Everybody said that when we had a black president, I'll never forget it, in People Magazine, in Newsweek Magazine, said that now that we have a black president, that television and movies are going to completely change. We're going to see black people in roles we never saw them before. We had one black president in that TV show, The Event, with Blair Underwood. Where is it?
We had a
spy show with two black characters, Boris Kojo, another black, very pretty, with which last name, PC by J.A. I watched it this week. Where's that show?
You're breaking up, Chief.
I said, where is that show? Boris Kojo, whatever his name is, had a spy show on with another black girl who was really, really attractive. They were a married couple, and they ran a catering business. Where's that show? Go. Those were two black shows on NBC. Go. You're only popular with popular. Want to know why? Because it's just bad. So you America, you never get never going to be a major America.
You're breaking up, Reese.
You're never going to be mainstream America until you decide to be mainstream America. Until you decide to be mainstream America, you're never going to be mainstream America. As long as you continue to isolate yourself, to marginalize yourself, you are only going to be important to mainstream media when you are profitable. That's it. Deal with it. It sucks, but it's true. I'm sorry that Jamie had to go. I wish he would have stayed. But he can't beat the argument. Most people can't. Teresa on the radio.
In Olympics hit by scandal and deficits, he rescued them. He turned around dozens of companies and became a business legend. A state losing jobs with huge deficits, Governor Mitt Romney turned it around, cutting spending instead of raising taxes. At every step, he's met extraordinary challenges. Mitt Romney, the energy and experience to turn around Washington.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Hey, guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Bleu.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hi,
how you
doing?
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're on with Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays at 7 p.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Simple question. Which candidate gives us the best chance of defeating Barack Obama? The answer? Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum is a full-spectrum conservative. Rock solid on value issues like life, marriage, and the right to own a gun, Santorum is also a favorite of the Tea Party for his efforts fighting corruption and taxpayer abuse in Washington. And Rick Santorum led the fight to overhaul welfare, ending abuse and helping millions go from welfare to work. But that's just the start. Rick Santorum has more foreign policy credentials than any of the candidates. And Rick Santorum's Made in the USA jobs plan will make America an economic superpower again. Rick Santorum, a trusted conservative who not only shares our values, but also gives us the best chance to take back America. Finally, a candidate we can all unite behind. Paid for by Rick Santorum for president.
This is Rick Santorum, candidate for president, and I approve this message.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reese on the Radio, on blogtalkradio.com, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
Proven conservative leadership. Newt Gingrich. In uncertain times, we need a leader whose commitment to conservative values has been tested. Newt stood with Ronald Reagan. Newt stood up to Bill Clinton. And Newt was there for conservative values. But most importantly, Newt has always believed in the greatness of America, that America's best days are ahead. The choice. Newt Gingrich, the proven conservative leader. Winning our future is responsible for the content of this message.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.reeseontheradio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on blogtalkradio.com.
He defends our freedom, and his record shows it. Ron Paul. Answering our country's call, Ron Paul became a flight surgeon in the Air Force.
As a doctor, Ron Paul delivered over 4,000 babies and is a leading defender of life. In Congress, Ron Paul never voted to raise taxes, never voted for an unbalanced budget, never voted to restrict gun rights or raise congressional pay. Protecting our God-given freedom, Ron Paul for president.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
Come on, players, stop hating. Stop hating. Stop participating. Stop participating, star. Come on, twinkle, twinkle, baby. Twinkle, twinkle.
What's up, guys? It's Reese on the radio right here on blogtalkradio.com/Reese on the radio. And you can check out ReeseOnTheRadio.com whenever you like. Send us an email at ReeseOnTheRadio@yahoo.com. And listen every weeknight from 7 to 10 p.m. I love this story. I just love this story. I love this story because, again, it's racism all the time here on Reese on the Radio. And you know what? Maybe I shouldn't get into it now. Should I not get into it now? Okay, I'm going to get into it in the next hour. I'm just going to tease it. I heard the funniest thing ever. And I've got audio for it. And I'd like to thank JC for making that available to me so that I have it. And I promise you, I'm never, ever getting rid of it. I'm never getting rid of this audio. I'm going to play it at night before I go to sleep. Or whenever I'm in a bad mood, I'm going to play it just so I can laugh. I laugh so hard. I had tears in my eyes. In fact, I'm starting to well up now. So hard. So we'll get into it in a little bit. Because Mary is such a Giants fan, I want to ask a question. It turns out that a report came out on Yahoo Sports. And let me just read the headline. It said the Giants knew that Kyle Williams had a concussion and targeted his head. According to the report, Sunday with the Giants and Kyle Williams, who had been concussed in the past, Williams, of course, went on to make those two crucial errors that helped cost the 49ers the game. Now the Giants hunting Williams' head didn't have anything to do with the mistakes that he made. That's according to the report. That's not the issue. The issue is that the message the league has been trying to send about concussions is clearly not getting through, or it is as it's, you know, been, or that it's being ignored. Anyway, according to the Associated Press, they got a couple of quotes from Giants defenders, Jaquan Williams and Devin Thomas. Respectively, I guess Jaquan was the first person to say it, says, the thing is, we knew he had four concussions, so that was our biggest thing, was to take him out of the game. Jaquan Williams was the one who caused the second fumble. Devin Thomas says he's had a lot of concussions. By the way, Devin Thomas recovered both fumbles and ended up saying that he's had a lot of concussions. We were just like, we got to hit that guy. According to the report, they're saying that pretty much that Devin Thomas and Jaquan Williams had decided that Kyle Williams, having two concussions, they were going to go after him and force him to drop the ball. The question is, was that fair play for two defensive players to take advantage of a player who has had concussions and use that again? Now, I'll take these last 6 minutes and let Mary respond. Maybe JC, too, since he's his fan. Do you think that this was fair play? If indeed they targeted Kyle Williams because he had a concussion.
Okay.
First of all, if Kyle Williams had these concussions and it was dangerous for him to be out there on that field, whoever allowed him to go on the field and play is to blame for anything that may have happened to him while he was playing. For these two New York Giant players to give a quote, like give quotes like they did, they're idiots. Why would you, even if that is what you thought, why would you say that? I love my Giants, don't get me wrong, but when you're wrong, you're wrong. I can't say that you're right.
So do you believe that, even though they were doing it, they shouldn't have made it public?
No, I don't believe that they should have done it. But if they were doing it, they definitely shouldn't have made it public. They shouldn't have been targeting anyone because they had, especially when you have a concussion.
They're not suggesting that he had a concussion during a game. They said he had had concussions in the past, so they believe that.
I understand that.
Okay.
I understand
okay.
that.
All right.
When you have had any type of head injury, you should not be targeting someone, or any kind of injury, a leg injury, any kind of injury, arm injury, doesn't matter, because essentially that can put you out of commission of ever playing again. But if you do something to your leg or to your arm where you can't ever play again, that's one thing. But with a head injury or previous head injuries, if something happens to that player, shut up,
murder.
JC. And what the bigger thing is, I want to know, did these two morons come up with that on their own? Did the two of them sit the night before the game and say, oh, well, we're going to go after Kyle Williams and because, you know, he's had head injuries before, he's had concussions, so we're going to go after him. And that's how, I mean, the Giants won the game fair and square. Kyle Williams was out there playing. They allowed him to play. Obviously, there was nothing wrong with him at the time that he was playing. And if there was something wrong with him, then, hey, that is on their coaching staff. That is on, you know, solely on the 49ers.
You know what? I agree with you wholeheartedly, but let's see what JC has to say. JC?
It's attempted murder. It's attempted murder. Even if you hadn't, listen. You're in a friendly game of football. You're
going to
get paid. No. Hold on. You're going to get your paycheck regardless. You don't get paid more by who you injure.
Yeah, but
and the fact that you tried to go after this guy, who was known to have a history of neurological head issues. It's attempted murder disguised under sportsmanship.
Now, JC.
Even though it's poor sportsmanship.
JC, who was responsible for letting him go out there and get on the field in the first place?
He himself.
Crazy accusations.
He himself. If the doctor said it's okay for him to play, if the doc said it's okay for him to play and he went out there, yes, he knew the risks.
Then we have another Michael Jackson case then.
If I target your head injury?
Well, you know what? You're right. Okay, both of you are right. Let me just say this. Before we go to top of the hour, you're both right for one thing. Let me say this. If the Giants players targeted him, they didn't, as the report says, they never went after his head. But the fact that they revealed that they went after him because he had a concussion, I believe that that was wrong. On the other side, Kyle Williams should not have been on the field, and he should not be playing football. He is dangerous to himself and to his livelihood, having five concussions. Definitely. Five concussions, the coaches should not have had him out there. Shouldn't have had him out there.
He's had five concussions?
Five concussions.
Listen, I hate to bring up, I know we're going to the top of the hour, we got to go to commercial break. Listen, and I know you don't like to talk about pro wrestling, because it's fake, remember, Mary?
Red Hart. I
Listen, no. One of the greatest pro wrestlers of all time. No, one of the greatest wrestlers of all time, and from when you were a fan, Reese, you will probably agree with me. Bret the Hitman Hart.
Yeah.
One of the greatest. Career ended after one concussion. One concussion ended his career.
Yeah,
he decided to retire because he knew that all he had to do was take one bad fall on his head, and it's a wrap for him.
Huh.
In fact, he fell off his bike because he hit a rock a year after he retired, hit his head, and had a massive stroke.
Well, again,
one concussion.
Yeah, listen, I agree with you for one thing, JC. Bottom line is, he shouldn't have been out there. The coaches allowed him to be out there, and he was allowed out there. So I'm going to say that everything is fair play when they're out there. I'm not exactly happy that the Giants revealed this, but everything is fair play. That's just
me. No. It's fair play. It's fair play. But to target him?
Yeah, I'm not happy
just
with
to use
target.
The term target
I know,
alone.
I know. I'm not happy with that either. I agree with you wholeheartedly on that one, too. Yes.
That's
but
a target murder.
Before we go to commercial, I would just personally like to say, Robin, you listen every night. You tell JC how much
Christ.
You love everything I say, so you should call in and join us. Give us your opinion.
Christ.
All right, Teresa on the radio, top of the hour, guys.
Television is a goddamn amusement park. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We're in the boredom-killing business. So if you want the truth, go to God. Go to your gurus. Go to yourselves. Because that's the only place you're ever going to find any real truth. So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off right now. Turn them off and leave them off. Turn them off right in the middle of a sentence I'm speaking to you now. Turn them off.
Come on.
All the humanity. All the...
Mary had a little lamb. It bleated white as snow. And everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool. Ah!
I never once said, Nagada.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you.
Welcome back to Reese on the Radio, right here on blogtalkradio.com/Reese on the Radio. We are happy to be back. And, you know, again, what I love about the way that the show has progressed, because a lot of times we get really, really wrapped up in the conversation, which is what I love. I love the fact that the stories and the conversation and debate is never, ever just simple. It's never, ever simplistic. It's never, ever, you know, this person has an opinion, that person has an opinion, we move on. Because everybody's got an argument. Everybody's got sort of a way that they feel. And I hope that you, listening at home or listening online and taking the time to listen to us, and some of you do, and I appreciate it. What I'm wondering, what I'm always cognizant of, is the fact that I know that some of you are probably thinking the same thing that we're thinking, and some of you are not or disagreeing. So I want to make sure that we all grasp at a point that you're listening to, and you're, but what about this? What about that? I know you're back there saying yourself, but yeah, but da 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 da. So we kind of make sure that we do that. I don't know if a lot of people caught this story today. I heard about it. When I read it, I thought it was a funny story, but I didn't know how deep we could get into it. But when the story takes on a life of its own, it just does. And some stories just talk to me. They speak to me. And this story, oh, did it speak to me? It did. East Haven Mayor Mr. John Maturo is a Republican mayor in East Haven, Connecticut. And James gets on my crap because he says, he gets on my back because he says I don't crap on Republicans. Well, we're going to have a little fun with this one. Just break down
the bigger story. Turns out that four police officers in East Haven's police force were arrested by the FBI, the federal government, the FBI. And what were they arrested for? Well, they were arrested for harassing Latinos within the East Haven community. Story goes a little something like this. The Federal Bureau of Investigation have arrested four East Haven police officers in connection to an investigation into alleged racial profiling. The arrests were made early this morning at the police department and at the officer's home. Those arrests include Sergeant John Miller and officers David Carey, Dennis Spaulding, and Jason Zulo. According to the indictment, Miller often supervised the 4 p.m. to 12 a.m. shift, and Carey, Spaulding, and Zulo all worked that shift. The indictment stated that all four of the officers used unreasonable searches and seizures and used unreasonable force and concealed their actions, and that Miller, who also runs the police union for the department, was the leader of the concerted effort to target Latinos. The indictment has several detailed accounts, including one where Zulo was on a two-way radio and said he likes harassing motorists, persons who have drifted into this country on rafts made of chicken wings. Officials said two of the officers were arrested, and the police department and other at the police department, and two others were arrested at their home. All of the arrested officers appeared in court this morning or this afternoon. The U.S. Department of Justice Civil Rights Division recently announced findings that the East Haven Police Department as a whole was violating people's civil rights. There are several civil lawsuits also filed against the individual officers. One of the high-profile incidents involves Father James Manship, who was arrested by two of the officers charged on Tuesday when he was videotaping what he called Latino business owner harassment. East Haven Mayor Joseph Maturo said he is standing by his police officers and that everyone is innocent until proven guilty. That is the report in East Haven. Well, WPIX in New York took a ride up to East Haven from their West 42nd Street offices in Manhattan and met with Mayor Joe Maturo. And I called him John earlier, so I apologize. Mayor Joe Maturo. And in that interview, this happened.
Why we can't always believe what we hear from the press. Never criticize without knowing the facts. What are you doing for the Latino community today? I might have tacos when I go home. I'm not quite sure yet. I have spent 2 years in Puerto Rico. I will probably do the same thing.
Wait, I can't even play the rest of it. I can't even play the rest of it. So what are you going to do for the Latino community?
Why we can't always believe what we hear from the press. Never criticize without knowing the facts. What are you doing for the Latino community today? I might have tacos when I go home. I'm not quite sure yet. I have spent 2 years in Puerto Rico. I will probably do the same thing for the Latino community.
You realize that's not really the comment to say right now. You might have tacos tonight.
I might have spaghetti tonight. Being of Italian descent, I could go out and I've had ethnic food. And when you ask me what I was doing for Latinos tonight, I may go out and have a Latino dinner in the Latino community. There's nothing wrong with that. And you can twist it and turn it whichever way the press decides to do.
I'm sorry.
What in the hell is going on?
He said,
Connecticut, baby. We got it on and popping up here.
He said, what are you going to do for the Latino community tonight? I might have tacos.
We're not in Southern California.
What? In God's name? What?
We're not in Arizona.
What? my
this,
God.
This all goes back to everybody that is not Latino thinks that all Latinos are Mexican. Tacos is a Mexican food. But not all Latinos are Mexican.
If I'm not mistaken, the Puerto Ricans where I live, they like empanadas.
Empanadas.
That's close to a taco. That's probably
they
close
like
to a taco that I think you could come.
Empanada is nothing like a taco.
I mean, that's probably as close to a taco as you can come.
It may look like a closed taco, but the inside is not like a taco.
No.
No.
He's going out to
you know, we
tacos.
Believe what we hear from the press. Never criticize without knowing the facts. What are you doing for the Latino community today? I might have tacos when I go home. I'm not quite sure yet. I have spent 2 years.
He's just the best. He's the best. I love him. I love him. I love him. I love him.
Why don't he go out to dinner with Fuzzy Zeller? where they can have tacos and fried chicken and watermelon.
And collard greens, exactly. Oh, my God. And he was just so defiant.
And then a PGA green jacket.
Well,
he's going to go home and have tacos tonight. He's going to have tacos with some Mexican's finger inside of it.
Yeah.
No, and what's sad is he's standing by his officers, and there is undisputed evidence that they harassed him. Now, I've been following this story myself for about 3 years now. And these cops were pretty brutal.
Listen,
before the FBI ever got the story.
The Hartford Current has been covering racial profiling since, I mean, one of the biggest stories that was there was in 2004, the summer of 2004. It was one of the biggest stories that was happening there. It couldn't be proven. And that was in the city of Hartford. But it had been well known that plenty of the police forces in and around the Hartford area, East Haven, Manchester, there had been plenty of arrests going on. And finally, something panned out. You couldn't see all those complaints. You know, really. And I'm stunned that it took so long for this to actually come. You know, and again, I tell you, this will be my favorite audio, man.
I can't always believe what we hear from the press. Never criticize without knowing the facts. What are you doing for the Latino community today? I might have tacos when I go home. I'm not quite sure yet. I have spent 2 years in Puerto Rico. I will probably do the same thing for the Latino community.
You realize that's not really the comment to say right now.
Yeah,
you might have tacos tonight.
I might have spaghetti tonight. Being of Italian descent, I could go out and I've had ethnic food. And when you ask me what I was doing for Latinos tonight, I may go out and have a Latino dinner in the Latino community. There's nothing wrong with that. And you could twist it and turn it whichever way the press decides to do.
He knew at that
okay,
point.
Okay, first of all, I doubt that he is going to be anywhere near any Latino community tonight having anything
other than
his head on a platter.
No time soon. No.
The only way he's getting tacos from anywhere other than home is if he goes to Taco Bell.
That's right. Exactly.
He got real nasty with the reporter when he realized that he didn't like the taste of his Kenneth Cole loafer.
Yeah, exactly.
He got real nasty, but listen, the police down in East Haven, how bad they had harassed these people. I'm not going to see these people like, you know, like they're really different. I'm guilty of that, I guess. But the way that they had harassed the Puerto Ricans specifically, I'm not going to call them Latinos, and that community was horrible to the point where local clergy was videotaping it, the harassment, and local clergy was getting arrested and thrown in jail.
But why? I mean, why were they doing this? Was it just out of pure, like, did these people just have pure hatred towards
you heard the cop
that
say
were,
he enjoyed
people that
he,
were different?
Reese.
Yes.
That audio about what the cop enjoys doing.
Which audio? The cop says what he enjoys doing?
Yeah, he put in.
Right. When he was on, he was on his walkie-talkie and said he loves. Yeah, let me get that right now. He says that Zulo was the one who makes the comment on the radio where he says, and I've got to scroll. Where in the world is it? I hate it when I miss the darn. Okay, wait a minute. I think I have it right here. Oh, yeah, he says the indictment has several detailed accounts, including one for Zulo, who likes harassing motorists, who have drifted to this country on rafts made of chicken wing. That was the line he said.
And they also showed. Hold on, Mary. They have desk cam audio. I wish I could find that audio. Maybe we can pull it up for tomorrow, where the cops were in the car and they were driving around and they pulled up onto this little Spanish bar.
Uh-huh.
And they looked over at the parking lot of the bar and says, wow, that bar, they're pretty hopping tonight. There's five cars in the parking lot. And the officer says, well, yeah, I think that's five cars too many. And went in and harassed them.
Really?
Yeah.
So, and this is, women, now usually dash cam doesn't have audio, or at least
yeah,
not this, all.
This had audio on it, yes.
Wow.
No, they dash cam does have audio now because there's so much corruption.
Yeah, that's, you know, again.
Well, I mean, look at Connecticut. Connecticut, believe it or not, Connecticut is probably the most corrupt state in the nation. I thought Rhode Island was in politics, but in Connecticut, oh, my God, there's not a mayor in any major Connecticut city that hasn't been thrown out or indicted or even in jail in the past 10 years.
Oh, I can guarantee you Boston's much more worse.
Now, hell, our governor, one of the greatest governors we've ever had, recently got out of jail and got a hell of a radio show up here on the absolute station in Connecticut. He has the number one rated show in Connecticut, Governor John Rowland.
John Rowland? Rowland's got a radio gig?
Yeah, he does, on WTIC AM 1080.
He's on the tick?
What's that?
He's on the tick?
Yeah, he's on the tick, right.
Yeah, they hate it when I call them that. I always call them the tick. But he's on
He's on the tick. A quick story about John Rowland, and not really so much off the subject, but back when I was managing the cab company and I was dispatching, when I was in logistics, one of our drivers had picked him up. His wife. And the driver, he got lucky, picked up his wife first in the morning, and she talked about how bad John Rowland, this is his first wife, that just divorced, and she talked about how bad he treated him. The same driver ended up picking him up later that afternoon.
Wow.
And talked about it, and he keyed the mic. I wish I was able to record it and listen to John Rowland berate this woman from Hartford all the way to Bradley Airport. He had a deal with that.
Wow.
And I said, wow. And at that point, I knew that, you know, this guy's not going to be in office too long. Because
he was
sick.
He was a real, real bad guy. He was really John Rowland. He got found guilty when I just moved up there. 2004.
Yeah, he got a lot of things done in Connecticut. He was just awful, period.
I'm sorry, man. This is my favorite new mayor. He is my favorite mayor.
Why we can't always believe what we hear from the press. Never criticize without knowing the facts. What are you doing for the Latino community today? I might have tacos when I go home. I'm not quite sure yet. I have spent 2 years in Puerto Rico. I will probably do the same thing for the Latino community.
You realize that's not really the comment to say right now.
Yeah,
you might
have
tacos tonight.
I might have spaghetti tonight. Being of Italian descent, I could go out and I've had ethnic food. And when you ask me what I was doing for Latinos tonight, I may go out and have a Latino dinner in the Latino community. There's nothing wrong with that. And you could.
We can't
always believe what we hear from the press. Never criticize without knowing the facts. What are you doing for the Latino community today? I might have tacos when I go home. I'm not quite sure yet. I have spent 2 years in Puerto Rico. I will probably do the same thing for the Latino community.
You realize that's not really the comment to say right now. You might have tacos tonight.
I might have spaghetti tonight, being in of Italian descent.
What do you think that this guy is sitting at home thinking about what he said today to this news reporter?
Well, one, he's already apologized. He's publicly come out and apologized. But Governor Malloy in Connecticut is already outraged when he heard it. Everyone is completely outraged about it. He said that it was definitely not the smartest thing to say.
I don't even understand why he thought that would have been any answer to the question. The question was, what are you having for dinner tonight? It was, what are you doing for the Latino community? I want to know what was going through his brain when it fell out of the side of his neck that, oh, well, I may have tacos tonight.
I think the reason why he says it, the reason why he says, oh, I might have tacos tonight, he was being condescending. He was trying to condescend the news reporter. He knew when he said it, when he caught himself, he was just like, God, that was dumb. I know he knew it was dumb. But at the same time, he was trying to say, I'm not doing a damn thing for the Latino community. Their accusations are baseless. I'm standing by the police officers. There's no corruption. There's no harassment. I believe, and you heard me, he said, you can't believe everything that the media says. He's trying to attack the media. But then to say something, here it is. It's a case about racial insensitivity. It's a case about racial profiling. And this knucklehead stands there and says something ultimately insensitive by turning around and saying, I might have some tacos tonight. I mean, what would he have said had the people been African American? Nobody would have said, I don't know. I might have
some fried chicken tonight.
I don't know. And the way he sucks his teeth, like, I don't know what I'm going to do. You have to see the video, the way he looks up at the guy. He's so put off by this question. What do you mean what I'm going to do for the Latino community? I don't know. I have a taco. It's just
why we can't always believe what we hear from the press. Never criticize without knowing the facts. What are you doing for the Latino community today? I might have tacos when I go home. I'm not quite sure yet. I have spent 2 years in...
I'm not quite sure yet. I might have tacos.
And how do you go from...
And that's right
and,
after
and
saying...
And how do you go from, I might have tacos tonight, to, I spent 2 years in Puerto Rico? What the hell does that have to do with the price of tea in China?
It was the social equivalent to some of my best friends are black. That's what it was. That's what it was. It was the social equivalent to, what? What do you mean I'm racist? What are you talking about? Some of my best friends are black. That's the reason why he said it. JC, what were you gonna say?
Okay, and he opened the opening the dialogue with you don't by attacking the media, you don't believe what you hear in the press.
Don't believe what it is that they say. Don't believe what it is that they say. They don't always tell the truth. And in essence, he's saying this whole story about this racial profiling is false. And then he confirms it, the racism in that department and in that town, by making this comment about tacos. It's evident.
But even come on and say that, and I mean, and that same press is like, you don't believe the press, and in fact, you're not hearing what you're hearing right now. Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain with the microphone.
Yes.
Is there like a high crime rate in the Latino community in this area of Connecticut? Is there anything going on in this community where these racially motivated acts were taking place?
Before JC answers that, because he's from that area, well, he's not, because that's actually south of him, but let me say this. New Haven last year was ranked number 4 in one of the most violent cities in America. New Haven.
Oh, wow.
This is East Haven. JC?
And what was the question, Mary?
He said, is there a high crime rate in this area with Latinos?
Well, actually, not so much in East Haven. East Haven, East Haven is actually, it's kind of weird because that's when you start to get towards the nice part of the shoreline.
That is correct. It's very correct.
Not too far from like Haddon, so, where the beach communities are.
That's right.
So are the Latinos crossing over into this line and they don't want them to come over there or something? I mean, just trying to figure out what, because I can't wrap my head around the fact that you would hate these people so much because of their ethnic background that you would.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, and I'd have to look it up. If I'm not mistaken, and I have to look it up, but I think that Latinos outnumber blacks in Connecticut.
I think you might be right about that. I'm almost certain you might be right about that. But let me say this. There's a reason why this is happening to the Latinos in the East Haven community. And as JC just expressed, it is a beach community. It's a well-to-do community. It's not like New Haven. East Haven is completely, it's a horse of a different color. Bottom line is this. You're a police department. Have officers in the community. In the entire state of Connecticut, there's only 40,000 police officers, are there? I don't think there are even 40,000. Actually, hold on. I'll tell you exactly how many are there. I do have that number. The exact number of, 4,000 Connecticut police officers. Okay? Now, that being said, you can't arrest white people who live in East Haven. Why? Because they're law-abiding citizens. That's not to say that Latinos are not. It's just saying that the white people who live in those areas, who live in nice houses, if you go into them, you're probably going there for a domestic reason. Maybe two neighbors are having an argument about who's got the yard line or whose bushes are covering my fence. Somebody's dog is barking for too long. But we don't have any arrests in the East Haven. We don't have people sitting in jail for for public drunkenness. For drug dealing, for whatever it is, we're not making any real arrests. We can't justify fiscally why we have a police station here, because we're never making any arrests. So what do? We create crime. And you get a community that is not well represented politically, and you abuse them. And that's it. You had a sergeant on a night shift, and somebody saying, hey, what's up? You guys ain't arresting anybody anymore? You guys ain't arresting anybody anymore? You guys got to pick this up. Go out there and find me some goddamn crime. And you can't just arrest. What do you do? You got Latinos hanging out at the party, at the club. Let's go make some noise. And they use, that's who they abuse.
You make a good point.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. Law-abiding citizens, they know their rights. American citizens sitting in their home know their rights. So the police officers come to a backyard barbecue because probably not blasting loud music, just people in the back having a good time, kids are probably playing. I'm not going to run over there and bust it up because they're drinking wine or drinking beer or any of that. Not the community. They respect the community. Oh, but you got a couple of Latinos walking around drinking beer, or maybe they're just standing around loitering, talking to their friends. Oh, we can harass them. They don't know their rights. You can't make bail. We can sit them up in jail. They've got a quota to keep. And again, people keep talking about, oh, there's no such thing as quotas. Well, how does a police station justify a bunch of officers with nobody's arrested? If there's law and order everywhere, what do I need a cop for?
This is true. And who thinks that there's no quotas? Who thinks that quotas don't exist?
No, but even police officers try to say that there is. Here it is that I'm paying for electricity. I'm paying for salaries. I'm paying for pensions. I'm paying for all of that for a police department where everybody's sitting in the police station doing nothing. Go out there and find me some crime. And that, what do you think they're doing? They're out there making it up. They're out there making it up. And it happens in every police department across this country. Every one of them. Because we have to justify the payroll. Because they're getting paid by the state. If the mayor, you're getting paid by, the mayor's got to justify that salary. And that's the reason why it's happening. It's the bottom line.
Well, the thing that boggles my mind is, if there is no crime, why would you want to create crime? How can you not justify your salary based off of the fact that, hey, there is no crime going on because we are in these neighborhoods?
Exactly. And that would be, of course, that would be the logical thing. because there is a strong police presence, because we're there, we're patrolling the streets, and we're keeping everyone safe for themselves and from themselves, we're out here doing our jobs. But there are no numbers. There are no numbers. Remember, this is a business, and police, the police enforcement, the law enforcement agency, they base their numbers on how many people they arrest, not how many people they avoid arresting, not how many people they didn't have. They want to make sure that crime numbers exist, and they can say they brought crime down, but they need crime to exist to justify their existence.
And that's crackhead logic.
Of course it is. Of course it is. But now that there's a federal investigation, every arrest by every one of those officers is now into question. Especially if you're Latino. If you were arrested by any one of those officers, you gotta get out of jail free card. Beyond a shadow of a doubt. All right, when we come back, Starbucks and alcohol. Is this a good idea? Oh, of
no.
Of course not. And Mary Mary is going to explain to me what a macchiato is. Don't tell me now. I want to know what this stuff is. I don't understand anything about this ridiculous stuff that they serve there. And I know they're going to complicate things with now adding alcohol to the menu.
Yeah.
She orders that type of crap.
Of course she does. That's why we're going to get the whole details. Folks, if you don't know what a Starbucks is or how to order there, Mary's going to come back and explain to us how to order these $4, $5, $19.99 cups of coffee. Okay? Radio.
An Olympics hit by scandal and deficits. He rescued them. He turned around dozens of companies and became a business legend. A state losing jobs with huge deficits. Governor Mitt Romney turned it around, cutting spending instead of raising taxes. At every step, he's met extraordinary challenges. Mitt Romney, the energy and experience to turn around Washington.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Hey, guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Dude Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hey,
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're on with Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, Reese, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays at 7 p.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Simple question. Which candidate gives us the best chance of defeating Barack Obama? The answer? Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum is a full-spectrum conservative. Rock solid on value issues like life, marriage, and the right to own a gun, Santorum is also a favorite of the Tea Party for his efforts fighting corruption and taxpayer abuse in Washington. And Rick Santorum led the fight to overhaul welfare, ending abuse and helping millions go from welfare to work. But that's just the start. Rick Santorum has more foreign policy credentials than any of the candidates. And Rick Santorum's Made in the USA jobs plan will make America an economic superpower again. Rick Santorum, a trusted conservative who not only shares our values, but also gives us the best chance to take back America. Finally, a candidate we can all unite behind. Paid for by Rick Santorum for president.
This is Rick Santorum, candidate for president, and I approve this message.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reese on Radio, on blogtalkradio.com, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
Proven conservative leadership. Newt Gingrich. In uncertain times, we need a leader whose commitment to conservative values has been tested
Newt stood with Ronald Reagan. Newt stood up to Bill Clinton. And Newt was there for conservative values. But most importantly, Newt has always believed in the greatness of America, that America's best days are ahead. The choice. Newt Gingrich, the proven conservative leader. Winning our future is responsible for the content of this message.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.reeseontheradio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on blogtalkradio.com.
He defends our freedom, and his record shows it. Ron Paul. Answering our country's call, Ron Paul became a flight surgeon in the Air Force. As a doctor, Ron Paul delivered over 4,000 babies and is a leading defender of life. In Congress, Ron Paul never voted to raise taxes, never voted for an unbalanced budget, never voted to restrict gun rights or raise congressional pay. Protecting our God-given freedom, Ron Paul for president.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
Come on, players, stop hating. Stop hating. Stop participating. Stop participating, star. Come on, twinkle, twinkle, baby, twinkle, twinkle.
Reese on the Radio, we're back. The number is 347-308-8701. I'd like to thank you for listening in today. Of course, as usual, and when you do, we love it. Now, I heard this story about Starbucks. And I have to admit, as soon as I heard it, several things ran through my mind. Why do I give a damn? Because I sure enough don't. I don't go. To Starbucks. I've been in Starbucks in my life four times ever. Every time I went in, someone else was buying coffee. I refused to buy a coffee that I've still never tasted. Starbucks coffee. Never tasted it. And I've got no interest in it. I'll tell you one thing that I know about Starbucks coffee. It's hotter than blazes. I don't know whether or not they boil the water for 3 days, like from that, you know, from the movie Shogun, James Clavell. Some of you may know that. They, you know, they boil the water for 3 days and they put the guy in it and burned him. Yeah, okay, never mind. Anyway, point is, I used to laugh about the heat on Starbucks coffee, that if you took four cups of Starbucks coffee and put them in a square and put a steak in between them, you could cook the steak in 15 seconds. It's like microwave. Because it's so damn hot. It's something about that water. It's just too damn hot. I don't know what they use, but the water is always hot. Hot, 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 hot. It's hotter than regular coffee. Now, I'm a regular cup of Joe guy. I get my coffee from those guys who have the little metal coaches out on the street. We call them the Roach Coach. That's where I get my coffee from. I want a regular cup of Joe. Coffee. It's also the reason why I go to Dunkin' Donuts, even though we're separated right now, Dunkin' Donuts and I. We're having a very tumultuous divorce right now. So it's kind of rough. But I still love Dunkin' Donuts. We may get back together, but we'll talk about it. But anyway, it's another story. There's something going on at Starbucks, and I'll never understand it, and that is, why can't ordering coffee be like it is anywhere else? When I order coffee, it's got to be, can I get a large cup of Joe? A large cup of coffee. Can I get a, you know, kind of, get a light and sweet. And a milk, no sugar. Can I get sugar, no milk. Can I get coffee black. But no, 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 no. No, 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 no. Not at Starbucks, damn it. Because in order for me to order a coffee at Starbucks, I need a GPS and a compass. And probably one of them protractors and a parallelogram or something to order something at one of these Starbucks. I'll never get it. I'm never ever going to understand it. And that's why I don't order there. Nothing should be, it's like a Chinese arithmetic problem ordering at Starbucks. That's why I don't get it. I don't know what a macchiato is. I don't know what a cafe venti latte smorgasbord is. I don't know about it. Can you get lentil in there? I don't know. Is there a lima bean spritz? I don't know. Everybody's in there getting something ridiculous in there. Every time I go, can I get a little bit of foam and not a lot of foam? Get a whole lot of foam. Can I just get some goddamn coffee? Screw all of this weird. All of you are crazy. So I figured I need a refresher course on how to order coffee from Starbucks. Mary, please explain to me. I know what venti means, 20 ounces. But what's the rest of this crap? Do I have to put her back on? Yes, I do. Hold on, Mary. Explain this to me, please.
Okay, can you hear me?
I can hear you well.
Okay. A tall is a small, a grande is a medium, a venti is a large.
Wait. A tall is a small? That's an oxymoron. You can't be a tall and a small.
Okay, but that's the way it is. You want a lesson or you don't?
Yes, I want a lesson.
Okay. So stop criticizing and just listen.
Okay.
So Starbucks, if you go into Starbucks and say, give me, they call it, or like a, some people refer to it as a Pike Place, which is their regular coffee. It's just an old cup of Joe, right?
What's it called?
It's called Pike Place.
That's what that's
because
called?
Because it's a Pike Place roast. Or you can say, let me have, you know, a tall drip, which is just their regular coffee. They just have different names. It's the same thing. You can go to any Starbucks and get just a regular old coffee. You can get milk in it. You can get half and half. You can get skim milk. You can get regular sugar, Splenda, all that. You can do the same thing to it that you can do to any other old cup of Joe.
They call it a tall drip?
A drip, yeah. Which means it's freshly brewed and it's dripping out of, you know, they pull the little lever down and it's a drip coffee.
Go ahead, move on.
Okay. You can get regular or decaf. They have both.
Yeah, I don't need that. I just want to know what the name is.
And then for all of us other people that like to have drinks made how we want them, you can get they have cold coffee, which is iced coffee. They have you can get like frappuccino, which is crushed ice. It's almost like a coffee shake, I want to say, but it's not. You can get extra coffee. You can get shots. You can get all different types of things.
Yep.
You can get protein drinks. You can get teas.
Wait.
So they service everybody
But explain to me what a double mocha latte swirl macchiato venti cream.
Okay, you went totally crazy. So this is what I drink. This is my drink.
No. I want to know what a double mocha latte macchiato spritzer with the foam, with the spleen. What is that?
A macchiato is some type of coffee drink, okay? You can get a macchiato with a double shot, so they give you, like, two shots of espresso. You can get a red eye. You can get a black eye. A red eye is one shot of espresso. A black eye is two shots of espresso. And, you know, they're regular.
So you got to go to bartending school to serve this coffee?
Apparently so.
Can I get a medium mulatto mocha chuleta necesita voulez-vous coucher avec moi?
Yes, exactly.
What the hell is with this language?
But see, this
get a latte with extra foam, and if you want extra foam, it's just that what they do is they take milk, they put it in this little metal, almost like a metal measuring cup,
right. And
they have this special machine where you put the tip of this thing that turns the milk into more foamy or whatever,
right?
and then they pour the milk into the drink, and then the foam stays on top. If you want the foam, they'll put the foam in. If you don't want the foam, they'll throw the foam out.
Okay,
you
fine.
You get whipped cream.
And they make pictures with it. They make pictures like hearts and elephants.
Right,
and...
right. I've seen all of that. But see, here's what I'm talking about. With all of that, what I just described, and the confusion that clearly JC and I have about the beverage menu at Starbucks, do you really want to incorporate the confusion of alcohol into all of this? I don't want to have a drink and then try to order from this menu. I'll never get it right. I mean, we don't need alcohol. We don't need it. We just don't need it. You imagine.
It's a coffee house. I don't understand why. Now, I'm an avid Starbucks drinker. I love Starbucks. They know me. Well, the old Starbucks that I used to go to, now I have to go to a new one because I'm in a new, up in a new office. But they know me by name. They actually they made my drink. If you go to the Clarendon Starbucks in Arlington, Virginia, and ask them for a Mary Special, they'll make you my drink. They named my drink. They were ready to put it on the menu, but they did not. Everybody knew me. Everybody knew my drink, and they knew everybody. If you were a regular there, they know everybody. It is a coffee place. It is like a coffee internet cafe, meeting place, social place. Nobody wants to go into Starbucks and drink a glass of red wine or get a Rolling Rock or a bottle of Bud Light. I mean, it's just, I think that it's very untasteful for them to be bringing alcohol into the establishment.
Well, they're bringing it to Atlanta is one of the places they're bringing it to.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, I know. You and I, we're on the same page there, JC. Atlanta, yes. So they're going to bring it into Atlanta. Now, look, we can't make Starbucks a bar because I'm telling you, there's going to be mayhem.
That's fine. No. Shut them down.
Well, you mean once it starts turning into like a bar sort of?
Of course.
Well, look, if the coffee is $4 a pop, your beer and your wine.
You need a second mortgage.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to spend. It's going to cost you so much money to have minor experience. I don't see it. I don't understand why they're doing it. Other than I believe it's going. But I think it's stupid. I think it's a dumb idea. Soon they're going to be bounced there. It'll be a velvet rope.
You're breaking up, Reese.
So I'm saying that soon there's going to be a velvet rope and a bouncer at this place.
Well,
okay.
This is my thing. If they want to bring in alcohol, if the Starbucks Corporation wants to start selling alcohol, open another establishment. Put them next to the Starbucks. I don't know. Put them on the same block as your Starbucks. Open a separate entity because I don't see how it's going to be profitable. Now, I know that they started this in Seattle, Washington. I know that they ran it for like a year. They did a test run like Burger King's doing a test run with their delivering Whoppers and large fries. But I don't see how it's going to work, and I don't see how it may work in some areas, I guess, but I don't see how it's going to work in the area that I live in, the Starbucks that I go to, the Starbucks that I have frequented throughout, this area being in different places. I don't see how it's going to work. I personally would not want to go into Starbucks and grab a bottle of beer.
You know what it is, Mary?
What?
I don't think I got it figured out.
Go ahead.
I think that Starbucks figured it in the cafe.
Again,
Starbucks,
this was,
what?
One of the reports said that what they did was at McDonald's, once they started offering the same kind of coffee or somewhere.
The McCafe, that's what I'm thinking as well.
And
I didn't read that report.
That they were trying to combat the market that McDonald's
was stealing
from. Yeah, they're trying to one-up them. And because they're no longer just like this exclusive, quote-unquote, coffee house.
But they are an exclusive coffee house. No, let me tell you something. No McDonald's, no Dunkin' Donuts, no
7-Eleven,
no Wawa. Hold on a second, JC. None of these places can compare to the quality of coffee or anything else or the service that you, the service alone is worth paying for. So no one can compare to that. And I don't care what Starbucks thinks, who is in these meetings. McDonald's can't compare to Starbucks. Come on.
Now, I give them credit. They make a good oatmeal cookie at Starbucks.
They make a good everything. All of their pastries are good.
Have you ever been to a McCafe?
Not at all.
The McCafes are very, very nice. And they don't have just your basic run-of-the-mill, who's that actor? That organic coffee from that actor, Newman's Own,
which is actually
pretty damn good.
So Juan Valdez?
No, Newman's Own, Paul Newman.
Oh, Paul Newman, right.
Yeah, that coffee is pretty damn good.
Well, I just don't see it.
Yeah,
now,
Starbucks, the
clientele at Starbucks is totally different than the clientele at a McCafe or a McDonald's. Or a Dunkin' Donuts. It's totally different. The atmosphere
right,
is totally different.
You guys
different.
Go there. You guys go there when you're at work. You go to McDonald's in the evening with the kids.
But you know what? This is true. There's one thing that you just mentioned, Mary, that's very, very obvious in all of this. And I think you just tapped on that. The problem that I have, that I know that Starbucks customers... very, very laid back. They go there. They drink their coffee. They converse with their little friends. Talk their trips to Cancun. Talk trips out to France. It's a very, very elite group of people. You know, they're very elitist. They're very hoity-toity. Bringing the bar element to Starbucks will incorporate that bar element into those places, and I think that those two will contrast in a negative way.
They will contrast. And, you know, I do understand that there is, because I said it myself, a different clientele that goes to Starbucks. I think that in the beginning, you know, Starbucks is more for people that made more money and things like that. But there are actually everyday average people that go to Starbucks. They don't make it, you know, most of the time if you go into a Starbucks, all baristas are very friendly to you. If you frequent there a lot, they get to know your name. They know who you are. They don't act snooty. They don't, you know, if you go and you don't know what you're ordering, you don't know how to order. I've never seen anybody be rude to anyone. So they have a very high standard of customer service. I don't think that they treat people, you know, differently based on their financial demographic or whatever, whether you can see that by looking at them or not. You know, they treat everybody equally. And there's people from cab drivers to, you know, CEOs and presidents of companies that go into Starbucks. So there's a wide variety of clientele, but it is just a different place. It's not like going to the drive-thru.
They have a loyal clientele.
They do.
I think that's just it. They have a loyal clientele.
I look at Starbucks. And I say, just looking at the clientele, that this is one thing that I noticed. First of all, the people who work at Starbucks can't afford Starbucks. That's one.
That's not true.
I don't think that those people can afford that coffee every day. I think they get it for free. They wouldn't go into a Starbucks if they had to. I don't think they would. There's that old common joke, you know, that says that they hire people who would never shop here. And I look at Starbucks, and every time I'm in there and I see the people who are in there, and these are not people that I want to hang out with. They look like
they're weird, right?
Yeah, they all look weird. They all look like they're too cool.
Like they're all off the set of Roseanne.
Yeah, no. They all, well, you know, you're talking about the people who work there. I'm talking about the people who purchase things from Starbucks.
Frequent.
Yeah, who frequent the place. I think those people are—they're too cool for the room. They're, you know, elitist New York Times readers, people who read the New Yorker, and you know, Time Out New York and stuff like that.
So with all that being said, Reese, why aren't you a patron?
I don't read the Times.
Reese,
it's like Starbucks is an accessory.
Yes.
Dapper Don should be a patron at Starbucks.
No,
they're an accessory.
They are. Starbucks is an accessory. People walk around with Starbucks like it's a handbag. They're
right.
Out that whole Starbucks coffee as if to say, you know, it's like people who walk around with Amfar ribbons. Look where I frequent. Look where I shop. It's like a Coach bag or a Louis Vuitton, you know, walking around in a Starbucks.
I can't disagree with you there because I think that is true. But
you look at people with Starbucks coffee cups, and you look at them and they all look like they got their noses turned up.
Yes.
It's like it does something to you.
I don't walk around with my Starbucks like that.
No, that's how others perceive you.
But I can tell you why now. If you say you go to Starbucks and your drink is $4, which is cheap in Starbucks, okay? It's pretty. That's that's the bottom of the barrel in Starbucks, okay?
Nope.
If you drink any kind of specialty coffee, say you go to Starbucks 5 days a week, $4 a pop. And there's 4 weeks in a month. You're spending $80 a month in coffee. Starbucks has obviously done something right.
I like
Starbucks
coffee.
And it can't just be the coffee. Whatever they have done, they have hooked people in, and they are making money hand over fist.
No,
every time I go in, it is always a joyful event. It is never, you know, it's never. I've probably only had a few occasions where I went in and I was unhappy with the way that my drink was made, but I've never really been unhappy with their customer service or anything like that.
Well, I think that this alcohol thing is going to be although Seattle is a different, you know, group of people, it's a different society. They claim it was a success because this starts to move on to other cities if they are remotely major cities. I want to see what the clientele looks like. I have to see what the clientele looks like when they start serving in. I want to see who the people are who have coffee versus alcohol sitting inside there, that Starbucks, with their laptop computer writing the next great novel, which is what so many of them.
And you know what else, too? I want to say something else before we leave.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm not mistaken, we can look it up and we'll talk about it tomorrow. Because Mary C. So talks about my Newman's Own coffee. I'm certain that McDonald's coffee has kicked Starbucks coffee's ass in blind taste tests.
Really?
Yes.
There is no way.
Oh, we got to look that up. You know,
okay.
on a final note, I will say this. During the 2008 election, I don't know whether or not you guys covered this, but there was a story in I'm almost certain it was an Associated Press story that ran in a lot of newspapers where they had actually done a survey on which of the Democratic candidates' supporters drank versus Dunkin' Donuts between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. Does anybody guess who got Starbucks and who got Dunkin' Donuts?
I'm willing to bet Barack
Obama got Dunkin' Donuts and Hillary Clinton got Starbucks.
I reverse.
JC's 100% right. They said Hillary Clinton supporters drank Dunkin' Donuts and Barack Obama's supporters drank Starbucks. Yeah,
misogynistic.
Is that crazy? All right, guys. That's our show for today. It is hump day tomorrow. You know what time it is. Therapy Thursday. And trust me. We definitely have a good one tomorrow when we come back. Thanks for hanging out with us. As usual, we appreciate it. Send us an email at reeseontheradio@yahoo.com and check out reeseontheradio.com whenever you get a chance. We love you, and we always thank you for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.
Good night, all.
Good night.
Good night, Robin.